Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, as we are every weekday morning from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. We are here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. So get your requests in now. That's one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. 7200. It is Thursday morning here on WGN, and we're going to be checking in with our buddy Dan Feinberg, who talks to us every couple of weeks about TV. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And he's going to be joining us to talk all things television, and that's just in a few minutes. We're going to talk about the top dog names, and we got some Thanksgiving topics to jump into and a couple of other food topics that we always love to talk about. As always, our phone lines are open at 312-981-7200. That's 312-981-7200 for talk, text, and Triple Play Thursday requests. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, but the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Also, check out our podcast. You should subscribe. Every single second of every show is podcast, and you can subscribe to it. Go to iTunes or where you get your podcasts. It's free. They will automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. And we have a ton of people who listen to our podcasts. We're very happy about that. We thank you for the support. So check out the podcast, our podcast at WGNradio.com. So there we go. And that's what's happening on the show this morning. Let me say hello to my great producer, Dan Shagru. Hello, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
All right, man. How about yourself?
I'm all right. Excited to talk with Dan.
Yeah.
I want to mention when we have him on, a couple of his tweets that he threw out there this past couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty entertaining. But hey, Dan's always entertaining.
Yeah, he's a good follow.
He is. So we'll talk to him in a little bit. So that's Dan. He's here. He'll be producing until 5. Right, Dan, you're going to stay till 5?
I'll try. Yeah.
Okay. And then in the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Good morning, sir.
How are you, buddy?
So we got to stay till 5? Is that the deal?
Yeah, okay. I would hope. Yeah, I would hope you
Wouldn't
guys...
Wouldn't that be an early day for you, Vic?
Yeah, that would be early for me. I'll stick around a little after that.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. And Vic's covering everything in the newsroom. A little less busy in the newsroom this morning than it was yesterday at this time, right?
Things are dying down.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's never really a dull news day nowadays.
No.
There's always something.
Yeah, the last 2 years have been pretty busy for some reason.
Yeah, and today, but by the way, today was also, yesterday was a big news day. Lots of crazy stuff went down yesterday.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Lots
of stuff. It only took one day, man. It's at the midterms, the next day. And
it's just 24/7.
I know.
I come in every night and get an update and just go.
You know, yep, it's like
tires
okay,
are squealing.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go again. Anyway, Vic's covering it all. He's in the newsroom. Dan is producing, and I'm your humble host here till 5 a.m. We're going to do some Thanksgiving stuff as we approach because we're going to be off that week. The whole week of Thanksgiving leading up. And we'll be back on the Monday after Thanksgiving. But we're going to do some Thanksgiving-related stories this morning and some food-related stories and a lot more fun. But we're going to kick it all off with our visit, our biweekly visit from Dan Feinberg. We love to talk TV with him. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print. And that would be F-I-E-N. And we'll take a break right now. And then when we come back, Dan Feinberg will join us. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And we got some Thanksgiving stories that we're going to talk about. We're a couple of weeks away from Thanksgiving, and we got some turkey and Thanksgiving stories we're going to get to, and how people name their dogs and some most popular dog names, that kind of thing. Also, having some fun here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let me say that welcome back, Dan Feinberg. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. And let's welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Well, thank you much, Nick.
All right, how you been?
Okay, swept as ever.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of stuff to talk about, and we want to get to. You've got a lot of stuff here that you've written about, and I also want to talk about the propositions for the midterms. You have the TV ballot propositions for the midterms. Why don't we start with that? Tell everybody what this was all about.
This is something that I first did in 2016 when I was being amused by all of the strange things that California voters got to vote for in that particular election. We legalized marijuana and a bunch of other fun things that year, and I proposed 10 or 11 ballot measures that year for the television industry. And this year, when we actually had a lot less amusing stuff on the ballot, it was a kind of disappointing California ballot once the courts ruled that the strange thing that was proposed to split California into three different states,
right.
Once they said that that wasn't constitutional, there wasn't anything truly fun on the ballot anymore. And so I proposed a number of things, mostly for my own convenience. It turns out that if you attempt to draft the laws, you can draft the laws to suit your purposes. So among the things on my ballot propositions and measures were some proposal to somehow curb Netflix's rampant, excessively long episodic drama lengths.
Right.
I believe that I proposed a 50-minute cap for all episodes. You can go up to 55 minutes when approved by an in-house board, and then up to an hour, but only then when approved by an impartial outside committee. I feel like this is a very good idea. I would also be totally willing to sit on the outside committee so that I could vote that basically no episode of television should ever be over an hour. There is simply no excuse if you have over an hour of television. What do you say you put some of it into the next hour? There's just no excuse to it. When I get pull out a screener and I see that the running time on the pilot is up, you know, an hour and 6 minutes or something, I wince. When I get to the finale of a season and I see that the finale is an hour and 17 minutes, I very frequently scream in impotent rage. So I felt like someone needed to finally take this on hard, and so that was one ballot measure I proposed. Problem is, I don't know how any of these actually did, because for some reason, none of the results have been reported in any of the news media that I've looked at. So it's a little disappointing.
Yeah.
Did you have any favorites from amongst my group?
Well, I thought you gave it to Saturday Night Live a little bit there about you know, you're never going to let him off the hook, and I don't think you should. You're never going to let him off the hook for having Trump host. And so tell everybody about what you said there about SNL.
Just simple equal time.
Yeah.
And not that pesky equal time where if you have Donald Trump host, you have to give commercial time to the other 17 dwarfs running for president on the Republican side. No, I'm just saying that any time SNL is being all glib and proud and superficially edgy about how they're sticking it to Donald Trump, how they're, you know, everyone's being like, ooh, Alec Baldwin zinged him again. All I want is a little picture-in-picture screen in the lower right-hand corner of that wonderful, glorious night that Lorne Michaels gave the entire show over to Donald Trump's presidential campaign. And just, you know, a friendly reminder that maybe not so edgy. 2 years ago, I believe it was like 2 years ago, or not 3 years ago.
3 years ago,
weekend,
yeah.
In fact,
but, yeah, it was 3 years. It was November. It was November of 15. Yeah,
man, time does fly. So yes, that, you know, so when Michael Che and Colin Jost are doing their we're zinging it to the president, all I want is a friendly reminder to everyone that Lorne Michaels put a lot of effort into normalizing Donald Trump back in 2015, and maybe that wasn't the best thing to do, and maybe he hasn't really expressed any real regret on it. But, you know, that maybe that's just me holding a grudge.
I think it is, but that's okay. What about TV Favorites Return Reauthorization Act?
Well, this was something that I proposed on the ballot back in 2016, and among the people who I suggested needed to return to television in that particular ballot, they included Jennifer Garner, John Goodman, Jennifer Aniston, Connie Britton, and all of those people have subsequently either had regular television shows, in some cases several. I feel like Connie Britton goes from show to show to show to show.
Right.
Or in the case of Jennifer Aniston, they have a show that is going to come someday on, not Facebook, hers is on Apple TV, I think, or is going to be on Apple someday. So basically, it's just setting up a fund to bring a bunch of people who I think need to come back to television. And among the people I listed who could benefit this year include Kyle Chandler. Guy needs a good new TV show.
Yeah.
Halle Berry. I think it's really time for Halle Berry to be front and center in a good cable drama. I think the fact that she came back to TV to do a summer sci-fi drama on CBS is one of the more peculiar things of our time. That and the fact that that series, Extant, if memory serves, actually got a second season and possibly a third, but I think maybe only a second. I think Linda Cardellini, who everyone is saying is going to get nominated for an Oscar for Green Book. Have you seen that one yet?
I have not seen it yet, no.
Everyone says she's really good, and if she gets an Oscar nomination, that would be awesome. That just, to my mind, should raise her TV series ask.
Yeah.
I think she needs a good TV series. And then, whatever happened to Joey Pants? Whatever happened to Joe Pantoliano?
That's a good question. I love Joey Pants.
I hope he's okay.
Yeah.
I hope he's okay. I really do. He had that great long time as everyone's favorite character actor, and then he won an Emmy for Sopranos, and, you know, utterly, totally, completely deserved.
Yeah.
And then there was that brief window where everyone was like, okay, let's try giving him a couple TV series, and none of them actually, unfortunately, stuck. He was the lead in Dr. Vegas. That didn't
oh,
go
wow.
Very well.
I totally forgot about that.
He was the second lead, or
yeah,
paired with Rob Lowe. Let's see, he was the lead in CBS's The Handler, which was a show that wasn't horrible and could have been decent. So, you know, look, if he's decided that he wants to spend time in retirement with Dennis Franz and Gene Hackman and a few other people, bless him. But, you know, if he's out there and saying, why has no one brought me a good TV show, I hope that this particular imaginary ballot measure will raise money to bring him back to the small screen, because I feel like the time is now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I love Joe Pantoliano. You know, always have, always will. What about the definition of insanity redefinition?
I'm just sick and tired of having allegedly smart characters on TV shows give the fake Albert Einstein quote that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Albert Einstein didn't say that. Nobody reputable said that. And so every time an allegedly smart character says that, it turns my brain off in roughly the same way that anytime a smart character misuses begs the question, anytime a smart character says that someone is chomping at the bit, there's just this whole series of really dumb, really avoidable things where I'm particularly baffled that they slip through in writers' rooms. Like, you figure a writer's room of 10 people or 7 or 8 people, one of them will say, okay, let's not use begs the question in that context because we're misusing it. That's all I want, is one person to say that. And so my ballot measure is some sort of penalty attached to having an allegedly smart character misquote Albert Einstein, because nothing makes your smart character look stupider than that.
You know, I love that you point, I love that you point out John Oliver in this. And I mean, I adore John Oliver, and I think he's brilliant. And I think his show is great. But that's pretty funny that you called him out on Begs the Question.
He misused it, I would say, 2 episodes out of 3 at some point last year. But earlier this fall, he had one of those contexts in which he would have used it, and he said, raises the question. And I wonder if that is an example of somebody in the writer's room finally having the gumption to say, dude, you're a smart guy. just don't do that.
Right.
And that's all I want is for one person in a writer's room to know what an actual idiom is and to make sure that the people on the show use it correctly.
You know, it's really funny, Dan, that you pointed all that out. We spent a significant amount of time the other morning talking about words and phrases that are misused that people might not know the definition to because they're saying it wrong. And that, you know, that's always a very popular topic. We get a lot of phone calls and a lot of texts about that. But it started out with there was a list of words that we were talking about that people, maybe you don't know the meaning of this word or using this phrase in the wrong way. And, of course, the first one on the list is literally. You know, like when someone says, oh, yeah, I watched this movie and it literally my head blew off. And, of course, that's not possible because you're talking and you still have a head. So, but that's how it started, and we always get into these kind of that kind of minutia. So,
yes, and the thing is, literally can be used correctly because some things actually are literal.
Yeah.
But begs the question is just never used right, and
yeah.
So people should just know that if they're planning on using it, especially if they're planning on using it in the context of it being a replacement for raises the question, they're just using it wrong and they should just not use it. It's just that simple. Whereas
yeah.
Literally, you can literally use the word literally correctly.
Right. Right, you can, and you just did. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we'll get to some TV stuff that he's reviewed and talk about some of the other stuff that's on TV right now. Yeah, you can read him in The Hollywood Reporter, follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right, we'll take a break for the news, and we'll come back more with Dan Feinberg. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Thursday morning. And that's Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. We'll play them later. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about top dog names. We're also going to talk about some Thanksgiving-related topics coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Right now, though, Dan Feinberg is with us. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every couple of weeks to talk about TV. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
All right, seen the trailer for this, and it looks pretty interesting to me. And that's the Netflix the Kaminsky Method. Tell us about that.
The Kaminsky Method is Netflix's latest Chuck Lorre series. Everyone has, of course, vivid and deeply sentimental attachment to Disjointed, Chuck Lorre's last Netflix series, starring Kathy Bates as proprietress of a marijuana dispensary.
Mm-hmm.
What, you don't remember Disjointed? I promise it existed. Scout's Honor. This one, unlike Disjointed, is a single camera comedy, a little bit like Chuck Lorre's Young Sheldon, which is a show that I strongly defend as being okay or slightly better than you think it probably is.
Right.
And Kaminsky Method is story of two lifelong friends. One of them, played by Michael Douglas, is Sandy Kaminsky, a Tony-winning actor who has become an acting coach in Los Angeles, a little bit like Henry Winkler's character in Barry.
Mm.
And the other is played by Alan Arkin, and he's Norman, and he's Sandy's longtime agent and agent to a number of other, let's say, 60s, 70s, 80s stars, maybe not so many current people. And really, it's just a show about their friendship. You know, Sandy has, the Michael Douglas character, has had some unsuccessful relationships, and he's sort of picking up a new fling with one of the women in his acting class, played by the suddenly ubiquitous Nancy Travis, and his daughter's played by the wonderful scene-stealing character actress Sarah Baker, who I love in everything and wish someone would give her a wonderful vehicle. And Norman is distracted because his wife, played by Susan Sullivan, has cancer, and so Norman is examining his own life and his own mortality. And it really is this show about these two guys who are perhaps a little bit past their peak and who are discovering that, you know, sometimes their bodies are failing them, sometimes their careers are failing them, but they're still sticking to it and being friends. To me, when it works, it's playing things as seriously as possible with occasional humorous beats, in the same way that I think that Chuck Lorre's CBS comedy Mom is a great show when it sort of delves into the serious side of addiction, which is kind of the show's backdrop. There's a lot of very broad comedy, you know, ha ha ha, old men have trouble with, you know, peeing, ha ha ha. There's like an entire episode and a half that's largely about urinary flow. I believe that my review said that it puts the P in AARP because, you know, I'm hilarious.
Oh, man.
Look, sometimes you got to, Nick. It's how we keep the days entertaining.
Right, right.
And there's a great cameo from Danny DeVito as Michael Douglas's urologist. And so Danny DeVito and Michael Douglas are and have been just a wonderful comic team.
Yeah.
And I would watch those two interact a long time. And so the stuff with the urologist, it's such familiar, ha ha ha, here's a prostate exam, isn't this awkward and embarrassing stuff that you've seen on so many sitcoms. But Danny DeVito really makes it genuinely funny in a way that it probably wouldn't have been otherwise. It's a show with good heart, but more than anything, it's a show with Michael Douglas and Alan Arkin doing things that they're good at the center. And I enjoyed watching them do that, especially Alan Arkin, who I think is just really great here.
Yeah. Well, he's just, you know, Alan Arkin's one of my favorites. And when does this start streaming, or has it started streaming?
I believe it starts streaming next Friday.
Next Friday.
Not this Friday.
Okay.
Lose track of the various Fridays when they run into print deadlines and whatnot. So
gotcha.
we had our review up a tiny bit early on this one.
Okay. All right. So that's the Kominsky Method on Netflix with sounds like a stellar cast. I will definitely get into that.
It's very brief. Also, it's only 8 half-hour episodes.
Oh, okay.
It's a breeze regardless.
Okay, cool. There you go. That's the Kominsky Method on Netflix. You know, I saw a preview for, I don't know if you've seen it yet or if you've watched it yet, but there's a, and I'm blanking on the name of the show, but it's Ben Stiller's an executive producer on it, and it's Benicio del Toro, Patricia Arquette.
Escape from Dannemora.
Yeah. Have you seen that yet?
I've only seen one episode. The THR review is going to be a Tim Goodman review, so I will get to it at some point because I am a huge fan of the prison escape genre. It is really probably one of my favorite genres. You know, whether it's the original Papillon, whether it's I include prisoner of war dramas also, so you can throw in Great Escape, Escape from Alcatraz.
Yeah.
Wonderful movie, one of my favorites.
Yep.
And the first episode I thought was really good. Patricia Arquette's fantastic. Benicio del Toro's good. Paul Dano's good. I look forward to watching more. What did you think?
Oh no, I haven't seen it yet. I saw the trailer for it, and I know it doesn't come on.
Okay.
It doesn't come on for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's a couple of weeks. I wasn't sure somehow you'd seen the pilot. No, it's good. It's a slow burn. It is definitely, you know, they don't rush into the escaping from the title all that quickly. It's a lot of laying the context. It's one of those truth is stranger than fiction stories, and so the relationship between the Patricia Arquette character and the Paul Dano and Benicio del Toro. Del Toro characters are very, it's a sticky relationship, it's an odd relationship, and Ben Stiller directed the entire series.
Oh, he did?
And he's very, yeah, he did, and he's very clearly mining a certain 70s aesthetic, and I dig it. I'm looking forward to watching more. I hope that subsequent episodes hold up to what I enjoyed about the first episode.
Yeah, I mean, it looked intriguing to me, and obviously the cast is pretty great, and so we'll give that one a look when it comes out in a couple of weeks on Showtime. I understand that Kidding got renewed. Am I nuts, or is that true?
That is true, and and you know, look, there's nothing wrong with Showtime wanting to have a relationship with Jim Carrey, and also with each passing week, I love so much more about the series. The more I think about it, the more Jim Carrey's probably the thing I like least about it. But I think that there have been some really great moments and very, very good episodes of that show as it nears its finale this weekend, I believe.
Yeah. I think it's great. I really do. And I agree with you. I think, each episode gets better and better. I think my favorite episode so far that really moved me, I'm moved by that show frequently, by what happens on that show. And I think that all the performances are really, really great. But the episode where Jim Carrey puts on the show for the girl who's dying from cancer, with all the songs, and he puts the show on for her. I thought that was just absolutely beautiful. I was really, really deeply moved by that episode.
I thought that was great, but just on a it is a comedy, so people should know they can laugh.
Yes, yes.
The episode with Tara Lipinski, her fake sister Sarah, and their friendly bird, the parakeet.
Yeah, yeah.
That was hilarious.
It was really
that was like absurdist, wonderful. It was having right in my sweet spot.
Yeah.
And they've done a few things like that. And as I keep saying, I think Frank Langella is remarkable in this show.
He's great. He's absolutely great. So is Catherine Keener. But Langella is just got, he hits all the marks really well. Cause he's really like his performance. Although, obviously, realistic, he's hilarious. I think I laugh the most at Frank Langella when I watch Kidding. I think that he's the character that makes me laugh the most.
And every beat that he plays is truly unexpected because he's kind of positioned as the antagonist in the show. He's the one who is ready to move on in case the main character, Pickles, Mr. Pickles, has gone insane and is going to have to be put out to pasture.
Right.
But he still has these beats where he is truly a caring father, and where his reactions are based on being a person who feels love for all of the, for his entire family that's in this family business that could be brought down by his son's instability, and you can see it breaking his heart. Frank Langella is of course a great actor. Anyone who has watched anything he's done knows this. I just love how they're using him here. It's such a every beat that he plays is so smart and so considered, and I feel like it might be slipping under into the shadows a little bit because, well, no one's watching the show,
right?
Because it's so very much the Jim Carrey show.
But
I would love to see Frank Langella get a little award recognition for this, if there were any way. But we need to start expanding our award categories to 10, so there's room for things like this.
Well, because there's so much television, we talk about this every time you're on. I agree with you. I think that they should have expand it more. Because the amount of TV that's out there is just overwhelming, and the amount of good stuff that might be missed by an audience. And you're talking about Kidding, and I think more people should be watching that show because I think it's absolutely terrific. And you're right. I mean, Langella's great on it, and I would love to see him get recognition.
Yeah, this has been one of my colleague Tim's crusades for a long time, and it's such a real no-brainer. I don't know why more award shows don't just expand the TV categories to 10. It would really make everyone happy. It would make more room for a few more broadcast things. It would make sure that The Good Place, for example, managed to get into fields more frequently as opposed to probably being sixth or seventh or eighth in voting sometimes. So, yeah, I think everyone benefits. So, come on, guys. 10 nominees.
Yeah.
Every category.
I totally agree. And speaking of The Good Place, wow, that show is just great, man. It's so great, and it just keeps getting better, and I love watching it. It's as far as network shows go, I think it might be the best thing on network TV right now.
Well, I guess at this exact moment, I can't think of an alternative. And yet I also like to mention every time we talk about Good Place that anyone who's watching and enjoying The Good Place really should also be watching Superstore before it also, because Superstore does not get the critical hype that The Good Place gets, and it's not as good a show, so don't get me wrong there. But on the other hand, it's not so much a worse show that it should be as entirely out of the conversation as it is. And it's a show that has an amazing ensemble and that really does a great job of slipping social issues and working class social issues into the conversation in ways that are funny and thoughtful and kind of surprise you. They had a great healthcare episode last week or the week before involving two characters having babies, and it was just a wonderfully done episode.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great show, and so there you go. Okay, hang on a second, okay, Dan?
For sure.
Okay, there you go. And Superstore, underrated, if there was one. And so there we go. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got more TV to talk about with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here. It's a Thursday morning, and it's Triple Play Thursday, obviously, so get your requests in. We'll play them later. That's one artist, three songs. Get them going. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We got some Thanksgiving topics that we're going to jump into because, as we get closer, we'll talk more about it and have more fun with it. We're off the week of Thanksgiving, so we'll do a little Thanksgiving talk coming up here on WGN. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, my guest right now is Dan Feinberg with his biweekly visit. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. Let's welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. You mentioned in the last segment, you mentioned Tim Goodman, who is your colleague, and you guys did kind of a TV critic debate about fall standouts and stumbles, kind of what you're looking at right now, just kind of a look back at the fall so far. What did you guys talk about? What were some of the things that you discussed?
Oh, our annual lamentation of there being no good new network shows and it seems like every year it gets worse and worse, and sort of have looked back, and we do this conversation basically every year, and the theme of the conversation each year tends to be, okay, so can the networks have let us down once again? Is there still good stuff to watch elsewhere? And thankfully, the answer continues to consistently be, yes, there is good stuff to watch elsewhere, though I feel like with each passing year, the networks let us down more and more and more. So, at least 3 years ago, there was The Good Place, but last year, there really wasn't anything great, and this year, there sure as heck isn't. We talked about a lot of the good stuff that's lurking a little bit away from the broadcast networks, and we talked about all manner of stuff, including FX's Mr. In Between, which is a good show that people can binge really quickly and really easily. Only six episodes. They're half-hour episodes. It's a hitman kind of comedy from Australia, and it's just a good show, and it's a good show that FX burnt through really, really quickly because they had no real reason not to. They didn't have any way to elongate its run, so I think they aired it two episodes per week, and so it was gone in a hurry, but it has been renewed, and that's a show that people should check out because it's quirky and appealing, but people know that they can go to FX to find good TV. We talked about the fact that you can go to less likely places like Facebook Watch because whatever the heck Facebook Watch is, Sorry for Your Loss, starring Elizabeth Olsen, is a really good, smart, sensitive, occasionally funny, occasionally emotional look at grief. And you wouldn't necessarily know that the show existed at all because Facebook Watch is struggling to really to let people know that it exists. Like, did you know that Catherine Zeta-Jones has a Facebook Watch series coming out in 2 weeks?
No. No, I did not.
Yeah, Oscar winner Catherine Zeta-Jones has a Facebook Watch half-hour comedy series coming out in a couple weeks about a beauty pageant coach, which sounds a little bit unfortunately like Netflix's Insatiable, which wasn't very good. But Facebook Watch is just struggling to get on the map, really. And this was a show of enough quality that it should have been in conversations. But, you know, it's had trouble breaking through. And we talked a bit about a couple things that are coming up. And that would be a sort of transition. Did you watch any Homecoming last weekend, Nick?
I did not. And I was just going to ask you about Homecoming. I have not watched it yet.
Excellent. Look at how I transitioned.
Isn't that great? Isn't that great? I literally, because I wanted to remember to go. I literally wrote the word homecoming on the piece of paper while you were speaking. I'm not kidding.
And you started thinking, am I supposed to be singing a Paul Simon song here? What's happening? Anyway. Yes, Homecoming. You should watch it. It's a good show. I don't think it's a great show. I've heard a lot of people talking about it as a great show, but I think you will really dig it, in large part because, once again, we keep returning to this theme. It's only 10 episodes. They're roughly a half hour apiece. They're, you know, some of them are more in the 33 or 34 minute range. But it goes down really quickly, and it's a solid conspiracy thriller. Sam Esmail from Mr. Robot directed it, and he's having so much fun playing around with conspiracy thrillers from the 60s and 70s, that look and that feel. And the score, the musical score, is literally, to use literally correctly, it is composed only and entirely of snippets from scores from other movies.
Wow.
And so if you're listening and you hear a musical thing that sounds like, God, was that from a Brian De Palma movie? God, was that from Parallax View? The answer is, yeah, it probably is.
Wow.
And so I've seen a couple of people on Twitter being like, God, the score makes no sense. God, the score is too hyper. It's too hyper stylized, whatever. The score is brilliant. It is one of the most interesting pieces of soundtrack collage I've ever heard. And if you like those movies and you don't have to even recognize the score, you can just recognize the sensibility of the score. And if something sounds like it probably came from 3 Days of the Condor or something from that period, the answer is that it probably did. And that's fun.
That sounds cool.
I think that this is a show that works best if you are a genre film geek who enjoys watching the conventions being played around with. It's worth watching. Only 10 episodes. They go by quick, and my recommendation for Amazon is that they do some sort of annotated version of this where you know where every second of the score comes from.
That would be cool. Okay, Dan, hang on, all right?
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and we were just talking about Homecoming on Amazon, and he highly recommends it. And we're going to come back. You can follow Dan on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We got the news coming up, then after the news, more with Dan on 720 WGN. Okay, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, downtown Chicago, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and then Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Thursday morning. We're going to talk about some Thanksgiving related topics and the top dog names and there you go, some and much more. As always, our phone number is 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every couple of weeks to talk all things TV. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. This is interesting. You know, we talked about the Romanoffs the last time you were on. And since then, they did an episode where they brought the Me Too movement in. And you were mixed on the show anyway. You thought the show was a mess. At least that's what you said the last time we spoke. But what was it about this particular episode?
This episode, which is the most recent episode was the first one to ring this hollow and this sour for me. I was really comfortably mixed on the first three. I really enjoy the third episode or installment, the Christina Hendricks horror movie, the international cinema pastiche thing. I think that one was the one that I enjoyed most. It's still fairly uneven, but, you know, it had a lot that I enjoyed. I enjoyed bits and pieces of the first couple. I realized as I was writing my piece about this one that the fourth one I never actually finished, which probably says something also, maybe just says that there's too much TV and I got distracted and I need to go back to it one way or the other. And it turns out that one was actually the only one that has been under an hour so far. So this week's episode, which is titled Bright and High Circle, which again is directed by Matt Weiner and co-written by Matt Weiner and another collaborator, and it stars, among other people, Ron Livingston, Diane Lane, and Andrew Rannells. And the conceit is that a Russian literature professor, played by Diane Lane, her family's beloved piano teacher, played by Andrew Rannells, is accused under mysterious circumstances of some sort of inappropriate behavior. Basically, a detective asks the Diane Lane character if she knows of anything, but doesn't say who levied any accusations, doesn't say what the accusations were, and immediately this sets people's tongues a-wagon, and the immediate assumption they make is that it must be something sexual, and they begin and they go and they start asking their sons if anything happened with them and the piano teacher, and it becomes this whole thing where simply the accusation and following the herd of the accusation becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and the kids begin to feel uncomfortable around the teacher. And if you don't know that Matt Weiner had a Me Too-related accusation leveled against him by a subordinate writer on Mad Men who claimed sexual harassment in very graphic terms, then the show's about nothing. You know, the show's basically 71 minutes of a sort of a Shaggy Dog story about the dangers of following accusations. But if you do know that there was this accusation against Matt Weiner that he's barely addressed at all, he started off, I think, loosely denying it and then said he didn't remember it. And other people who worked on the show at the time have corroborated tangential things, but they weren't in the room at the time, so who knows? And certainly it's had no effect on his career, so, you know, whatever. It becomes this really uncomfortable, non-apology accusation in which he's basically blaming people leveling accusations. And at one point, characters say that one of the characters in the episode says it doesn't even matter whether or not it's true, because the worst thing that can happen is for people to simply follow the mob, because that changes the way that people look at the accused. And it's really an unpleasant way of addressing an unpleasant thing in which he basically accuses anyone who wondered about the truth of the accusation of being part of a mob against him and being worse than the actual potential alleged act itself.
Wow.
It's ugly.
Wow.
And it's bad. And either you want to say this is his horrible way of addressing accusations against him, or you say this is just a very bad episode of TV that's not about anything. So I think it's entirely fair if you want to say, oh, no, he wrote this long before, he wasn't addressing anything, whatever, who cares. If you want to do that, it's just a bad TV episode that never should have been 71 minutes, and much more so than, and this is already a series of anthology episodes that are all bloated and way too long, and this one is probably really about like 45 minutes too long. I think there's about 10 minutes of story in this. So
wow.
It's either that or this is a very bad look for Matt Weiner. And I love Mad Men, and I think Matt Weiner is truly brilliant, and this is such a misstep of an episode for me.
Wow. Wow, that's weird.
Yeah, so either this is a bad way of addressing a situation for Matt Weiner, or it's just a bad episode of a TV show.
Right.
And, you know, I've yet to hear anyone actually say that they enjoyed this episode of TV. And that to me ought to be a bigger concern for Matt Weiner as to whether, you know, than whether or not anyone is thinking he did a good job of responding to accusations.
Right.
He did a lot of things in Mad Men that were very on-the-nose storytelling, that were always great on-the-nose storytelling. This is an episode made by a person who doesn't appear to know how to tell a story, and that's a worry.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, listen, let's hear about Tell Me a Story. This is on CBS All Access. It's Kevin Williamson's latest project.
It is, and they sent me all critics, really, really scary pig masks that nobody in the Hollywood Reporter office appreciates that I've put out in very prominent display. Look, it's not my fault. They sent me a pig mask. Somebody last year sent me a strange mannequin head. The pig mask goes perfectly on the mannequin head. And if I put it facing out away from my desk so that it stares at everyone who walks by my desk, whose fault is that? It's not my fault. Anyway, Tell Me a Story, which premiered on CBS All Access, comes from Kevin Williamson, who, of course, was responsible for the fantastic Scream, the briefly very, very entertaining Dawson's Creek, Vampire Diaries, which I enjoyed for a long time, and then a bunch of more recent TV shows that have been awful. So this is kind of his way of putting certain fairy tales through a modern prism, but not in the once upon a time way. It's kind of, there are three modern stories that have parallels to, what are they? Little Red Riding Hood, The Three Little Pigs, and Hansel and Gretel. Mm. And it seems like it should be entertaining and fun and a neat kind of genre revisionism, because that's a thing that Kevin Williamson used to be really, really good at. Here he doesn't seem to be very good at it. If you didn't know what the show's conceit was, if you didn't know that fairy tale thing, you'd have a hard time understanding what you were watching or why you were watching it. You'd think that it was just a kind of cable Pulp Fiction knockoff of intersecting vaguely violent stories. The cast is very, very good, including James Wolk from Mad Men and other things. Kim Cattrall plays effectively the grandma from the Little Red Riding Hood story, so that's kind of amusing casting. It's a really good cast. It's a really, really pretty cast. Paul Wesley from Vampire Diaries, Michael Raymond James from Terriers, a bunch of really good actors, many of whom I quite like. There's just not enough pleasure being taken in what ought to be an entertaining and fun premise. And it's just hard to get into. And having seen a handful of episodes, I don't see much reason to keep going with it, unfortunately. And I haven't heard anyone talking about it at all, except for my coworkers telling me to turn the damn pig mask around. They're talking about it a lot. So, there you go. That's the buzz I'm building for this one, is freaking out my coworkers with the pig head.
With the pig mask.
But nobody has said, ooh, cool pig mask, now I need to watch Tell Me a Story on CBS All Access.
Right.
And similarly, I haven't told anyone, hey, if you like this pig mask that's scaring you, you really want to watch Tell Me a Story on CBS All Access. So this is not going to be the thing that I'm going to tell anyone they need to get CBS All Access for.
Okay.
Good Fight, on the other hand, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Now let's move on to Legacies. Tell us a little bit about that.
Legacies is the latest ongoing extension of the, speaking of Kevin Williamson, Vampire Diaries franchise. And so Vampire Diaries begot the originals. The originals begot Legacies. And Legacies it takes a couple of the characters from originals and also Vampire Diaries, but really what it is they can get away with making lots of references to Harry Potter because it's a Warner Brothers TV show, and apparently Warner Brothers doesn't care. So it's about a school for vampires, werewolves, and witches, young vampires, werewolves, and witches. It also looks suspiciously like Professor Xavier's school from the X-Men franchise, comic, film, and otherwise. And it's a lot like any other story of a school for extraordinary children that you might have seen. And that's not necessarily bad. It's just a very light version of that. So even Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which I'm mixed on, eventually, once it gets to its Witching Academy, is a good deal more specific and interesting, but with a very comparable venue. But I think it's the kind of show where if you like these characters and you like the decade of jargon that the show has developed, all of the talk about hybrids and compelling and all of the Salvatore family lore, if you're kind of into that, there's a pleasant familiarity to hearing these characters talk this way and hearing them be part of this world. It's not a show that, if you haven't watched Vampire Diaries of the Originals, is really worth tuning in for, but if you accidentally found yourself doing so, you'd find that you could hop right into it because it looks like so many other different shows of a comparable type that you've found before. It's really not bad. It's just not good exactly. But yeah, it's not the worst thing you could do if you happen to be a Vampire Diaries, Mystic Falls, et cetera, fan.
Okay. That's on the CW. That's Legacies. Okay. Before we go, I just wanted to mention two tweets that you had that I thought were great. For perspective, this World Series game has lasted as long as an average season of BoJack Horseman or an average episode of Ozark. Hello.
Oh, that was the 18. That was the 18-hour game.
Right.
18-hour.
Right.
18-inning
game.
Yes, that was crazy. As a Red Sox fan, that game was extremely frustrating for me. The rest of the series after that game was extremely satisfying.
Of course. Yes. So. Yes. And then finally. Honestly, NBC should just give Megyn Kelly slot to Gritty. Any mention of Gritty, and I am happy. So I just...
I love Gritty.
I do, too.
I love Gritty.
So
I hear some people don't love Gritty. I am so much a fan of Gritty and all that Gritty represents.
Yep.
Hail Gritty, I say.
I'm with you 100. I absolutely adore Gritty. I happen to have a weakness for mascots in general. They just crack me up. But I have to say that Gritty is just exceptional, and so I'm glad that you actually mentioned Gritty, because I'm pro Gritty. Let me just say that right now. So
and you're actually allowed to say that as a Blackhawks fan. It doesn't cause you to get in any trouble.
No, it doesn't, and it doesn't. I mean, I don't care about the team. I hate the Flyers, but I love Gritty. So anyway.
Okay,
yeah. So all right, Dan, always a pleasure. Now we're not going to talk to you for a couple of weeks here because I'm on vacation the week of Thanksgiving. So the next time that we're going to talk will be Thursday, December 6th. So have a nice break, and we'll talk to you. Afterwards.
Looking forward to that, and there will be plenty of TV to discuss a month from now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're almost a month away. That means there will be 55,000 new TV shows to talk about in that time period.
talk to you then.
All right, Dan, take care. There you go. Dan Feinberg, everybody. We won't talk to him for a couple of weeks because of the holiday, but he'll be back. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him and should follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we'll talk to him in a few weeks. All right, let's take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. I didn't recognize that at all, Dan, because I never watched that show. This is Triple Play Thursday, by the way. Triple Play Thursday, yeah. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. 847 area code request is TV composer Dominic Frontier. And that's Vegas. Did you ever watch Vegas, Dan?
I did not.
Yeah. That's Robert Urich. You know, he played Dan Tana in Vegas. That was his name.
That is a heck of a name.
Dan Tana. Yeah. Very popular show, but I never watched it. That's why I didn't recognize I was not a regular viewer of Vegas. I'd seen bits and pieces of it over the years, and obviously I was aware of it, but I'd never seen it. So we'll find out two more TV shows, I would imagine, that Dominic Frontier did the composing for. And that'll be coming up right here on Triple Play Thursday. So we're keeping an eye on the situation in California. We'll get an update at the bottom of the hour for what's going on there, and we'll keep you posted on everything that's happening. So Vic's in the newsroom, keeping it going in there. I want to mention my film club screening on Tuesday. I hope you guys can make it, because it's our tribute to the great Burt Reynolds. Burt Reynolds passed away just recently, and we wanted to pay tribute to him and show one of his best movies. So we are showing The Longest Yard, which is a great comedy, a great prison movie, and a great football movie, all in one. Directed by the great Robert Aldridge, stars Burt Reynolds, Eddie Albert, and a sea of tremendous character actors. It's about a bunch of prisoners who put a football team together, led by Burt Reynolds, and they play in a game against the guards, the prison guards. It's got so many classic moments and classic lines in it. It's one of my favorites. It's very, very near the top of my favorite Burt Reynolds movie. And we were very lucky to get it, because it very rarely gets shown on cable, and you don't see it on the big screen at all. And we're so happy to be showing it. It's going to be Tuesday night, November 13th, and it's at 8 o'clock. It's $10 to get in. Parking is free. And you can make your reservations now. Get there early, have some dinner, have a couple of cocktails. We're at the Rosemont 18, AMC Rosemont 18, formerly Movie Co. And we're in the big, beautiful Premier Theater, state-of-the-art digital projection and sound. And we're going to watch The Longest Yard, which is just a terrific movie. And it's so much fun to watch with a big crowd, because I remember vividly the first time seeing it. I had very rarely been in a theater where the people had so much fun. Lots of cheering, lots of laughing. Just a great crowd-pleasing movie. And let's get everybody in there and pack it. Pack the place. It's only $10, like I said. Parking is free. Starts at 8. I'll introduce the movie, and then we'll watch the movie together. And then afterwards, I'll give you some trivia and some behind-the-scenes stuff. We'll do a Q&A and just have a nice little movie talk after. So our tribute to Burt Reynolds, I think, is one of his best movies, and one of my favorite performances of his as well. And I'm very excited to see it on the big screen. I can't even remember. I mean, it's been decades since I've seen it on the big screen. And it's one of my favorite Burt Reynolds movies ever. So get your tickets now, amctheaters.com. AMCTheaters.com. Get your tickets now, and we'll see you on Tuesday night. Starts at 8 o'clock for The Longest Yard with Burt Reynolds. AMCTheaters.com. Reserve your seats now, and we'll see you then. Okay, let's take a quick break here, and then we got a news update coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Triple Play Thursday continues, and that's one artist, three songs, your requests, 312-981-7200, and that's from the 847 area code. TV composer Dominic Frontier with Probe 1972. So there you go. Welcome back. It's we're live here in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above downtown Chicago here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to text or talk to us, or get your Triple Play requests in as well. 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about popular dog names and some of the richest pets in history. We also have some Thanksgiving themed stories that we are going to get to as well. But we are right now keeping an eye on what's happening. And Vic, you said it's in Thousand Oaks, California.
That's right, just south of Simi Valley.
Mm-hmm. And we're keeping an eye on what's happening. And there was an active shooter reported. We know that at least one officer is down at this point.
Yeah, you know, I want to stay away from numbers because they're all over the board. But there are definitely multiple injuries and at least one officer down. We're also seeing reports that possibly the suspect may be in custody. Again, there's other reports that he's not. So we're not sure yet. We'll keep an eye on it.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on what's happening. We don't want to, you know, we don't want to speculate, and we don't want to report anything until it's completely confirmed. But right now, just know that Vic's got Vic's keeping an eye on it, and we'll report on the latest when we get all the details and when they're confirmed and everything, because we don't want to go on, we don't want to speculate or report anything that's erroneous. So we're going to stay on top of the situation. Vic is in the newsroom. We'll keep an eye on it, and as soon as anything happens and we get any more news, we'll break right in and give you guys all the latest on what's happening with this active shooter situation in California. So we wanted to make sure that you guys know that we're keeping an eye on it, and we'll give you all the latest details, and we'll jump in at any time. So, okay, it's a Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Get your request in now. Yeah. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we are back. And we have the 10 most popular dog names of 2018. And we've talked about pet names in the past. and where they got their names. Now, I'm looking at this list, and these seem to be like, you know, whenever they do, Dan, you know how when they do the, every year they do the baby names?
Right.
You know, the most popular baby names. And there seems to be a trend every year, depending on what's happening sort of in the news or pop culture, where you'll see a name sneak in there that you'd never really seen before, and then suddenly everybody's naming their kids that name. But then, you know, you got the old standbys.
Right.
You know, you get your Johns, you got your...
Michaels.
Michaels, your Steves, you know, that those are their... They'll always pop up. Linda, you know, Kathy, those are all very...
Mary.
You know, Mary, those are all very, very popular names. But I always, you know, we talked about this, how you end up naming your... the animal, you know, the pet that you have, and I guess you go through, you know, you go through ideas on how to name them, and so I'm building up a sneeze here, Dan. This is always exciting for me.
Does anybody out there have a pet named Sneeze? 312-981-7200.
So maybe Sneezy.
Sneezy.
Yeah, that was one of the dwarfs.
There you go.
One of the seven dwarfs wasn't there a Sneezy?
I you know, when you said it, I'm like, is there?
Wait, no, I think Sneezy was a dwarf. I'm pretty sure, I think.
Yeah, I want to say, because you are correct.
Yeah, okay.
Along with Doc, Grumpy, Happy, Sleepy, Bashful, and Dopey.
And only Bashful and Doc were the only ones that didn't end in Y. And everybody didn't ever, and Doc's the only one that doesn't really describe a personality trait. Unless he's I don't remember if he is a doctor. Is he a doctor dwarf?
I've never seen a medical degree on any of those walls. So,
and he doesn't. I don't remember him having a stethoscope around his neck in any of the scenes.
Right? Wouldn't, if you were working at a coal mine and you had a doctor's degree, wouldn't you just become a doctor?
Yeah.
Just be like, unless he's servicing the other guys.
And also, it would be really great if he were, because he could help out with a poison apple. That would, you know, it'd be good to have a doctor around after ingesting a poison apple. But yeah, so Doc, and so Sneezy, so all he did was sneeze. I don't remember. So I believe my sneeze has passed.
Some people look at lights. Some people think of Sneezy.
I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, so just like baby names, a number of dog names spike in popularity each year, as many of them are pop culture inspired. This year is no exception, with popular movie franchises playing a big role in the names we picked for our pooches. According to data collected by Banfield Pet Hospital, the world's largest veterinary practice, where is that, I wonder? Where is Banfield?
It's a chain.
Oh, it's a chain?
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, okay. Wow, I didn't know. Do we have one in Chicago?
I think they're tied in that they're like tied in with one of the major pet stores. So like,
oh, I see.
If there's like a vet on, you know, like immediate care situation, I think it's through Banfield.
I see. Okay. Well, I didn't know that. I haven't had a pet in a while, so I'm not as familiar with the world of pet maintenance and pet care and pet health as I used to be. Banfield Pet Hospital is the world's largest veterinary practice, which mined the records of more than 2.5 million of its puppy patients. The Marvel movies were super influential in 2018. Black Panther-inspired names have quadrupled in popularity in the past year, while Avengers Infinity War led to 66% more cats and 37% more dogs being named Iron Man and Guardians of the Galaxy. It created a 30% increase in dogs behind named Star-Lord. Name your dog... After Chris Pratt. It seems as if pet owners have taken a side in the Cardi B Nicki Minaj feud, as Banfield found there are 6 times more cats and 3 times more dogs named Cardi B in 2018 versus 2017. Name it Cardi B? However, the top 10 names of 2018 didn't include any of these movie or celebrity names, but instead pretty sensible ones. And here are the 10 most popular dog names for 2018, according to Banfield's list. Before we get into that, what were some of the names from Black Panther? Are they naming their dogs Wakanda?
I actually, character names. Yeah, they were character names. I omitted them from the article because I couldn't find proper pronunciations for you.
Right. Yeah.
I will pull those up and we will do our best to.
And Infinity War. So, I mean, I'm assuming, you know, would be all the characters. Like Hulk, you name your dog Hulk. Or, you know. Who's my favorite? My favorite. They kill him in the first 5 minutes of the movie. The villain from Thor that Tom Hiddleston plays. Why am I blanking
Loki.
Out? Loki. See, now that's a cool name for a dog, right? Loki?
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. So, again, I apologize in advance. Nokia,
mm-hmm.
Okoye, and Shuri.
Oh, okay. All right. So, there you go. Yeah. You know, what was really funny, Dan, because, you know, when Infinity War came out, and you still haven't seen it, right?
I have not.
But you know what happened.
From what I understand, yeah.
So, you know, when it came out, we had to stay away from spoilers and stuff, especially, you know, how it ended. I mean, I was just like, I was really, you know, and I guess I knew that it was going to end that way. At least comic book people knew what was going to happen at the end. But it wasn't, I mean, it was devastating. At the last, like, 10 minutes of the Infinity War, particularly the fate of Spider-Man was just like really devastating and like wow. But then again, it's tempered by the fact that we got another movie coming out that they're doing a sequel. What's the bad guy's name? The Josh Brolin.
Thanos.
See, now that would be a cool name, right? That'd be a cool name for a dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they kill off Loki in the first 5 minutes of the movie. I was like, what the? I remember because he's my favorite. He's my favorite character in. And I know that maybe it's weird. He's my favorite character in all the Marvel universe. And I think Hiddleston is phenomenal. And I particularly liked him in Ragnarok. I thought he was fantastic. But I love him from the very get go. I thought he was great in the Avengers, the first Avengers movie, and of course Hulk slamming him around like he's a rag doll is pretty awesome. But and then I'm watching Infinity War, and I'm like, oh cool, there's it. And then I'm like, wait a minute. He was already in trouble. Like, in the first scene in the movie, they got Loki all tied up, and then he ends up, and they kill him. And I'm like, what the heck? You know, like, there's 2.5 hours left of this, and Loki's already gone. So, I think Loki's a cool name. Yeah. All right. All right. How about Stark? What if you just name your name? Stark for short. His full name, Tony. Tony Stark. You know, I know a lot of people, and we've talked about this in the past, Dan, a lot of Cub fans. How many people have named their pets either Wrigley or Addison?
Sure.
You know?
Clark. My cousins have a Clark.
Yeah, they have a Clark. Is it named after?
Yep.
Yeah, because they're Cub fans?
Yep, and they live by Wrigley.
Yep. Clark is the name of the mascot, right? Isn't the mascot Clark?
Yep.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, listen, my friend Joe, he had a dog, Wrigley, named it Wrigley. So you see that a lot. I'm waiting for people to start naming their pets Gritty. That's what the next step. I was so happy that Dan Feinberg enjoyed Gritty.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, that was great. All right, so here they are. These are the top 10 names, and they're not going to reflect, you know, these very specific pop culture, you know, names. These are your basic names. Number one, Charlie. I think that's a good name for a dog, right? Charlie. Yeah. Number two, Coco. That seems like a perennial, right, Coco? Especially if you have like a brown dog. How about next would be Daisy. And then next would be Bailey. Bailey's a very popular name for dogs. I knew people who had Bailey named. One person was an alcoholic who enjoyed enjoyed Bailey's drink. How about Lola? That's for all the transvestite dogs that Ray Davies owns. I told you that my friend Chaz Verba didn't know that's what that song was about.
Oh,
did really? I didn't tell you that?
Well, I mean, you've told me that, but.
It's hilarious because we were playing it one time and this was not very long ago. This was probably 10 years ago. Now, you know that song's like from the 60s or early 70s, okay? And you know, it's about Ray Davies, based on a true incident. Ray Davies actually picked up a woman who, what he thought was a woman, it turned out to be a man in drag. And so he wrote a song about it. And so all these years go by, this song, and it's not like Chaz had never heard it before, but we were having an opening night party for a play. I can't remember which one. And we were at the space over on Elston, the Prop Theater. And, you know, we had, you know, like we had drinks and we had food and stuff. We were celebrating the opening night and everybody was in. And Chaz is a DJ. That's what he does for a living. And people were like requesting songs, and somebody requested Lola, you know, by the Kinks. It might have been Oaken, because the Kinks are like one of Scott's favorite bands. And so he plays Lola, and then I guess it was the first time he was listening to the lyrics, and he went, "Hey, is this song about a transvestite?" And I'm like, was this your first time hearing this song? He's like, "No, I just never knew that that's what it was about." I'm like, "What, are you kidding me? Have you heard the lyrics to this song?" So, all right, let's take a break. We already got our top five here. Number one is Charlie. Number two is Coco. Three is Daisy. Four is Bailey. And then five is Lola. If you want to jump in here with specific names of pets, you can do that at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll be back after this. Now, this one I know. This one I recognize. 847 area code, Dominic Frontier. That's Hang 'em High. That's the theme from Hang 'em High, Clint Eastwood movie. Clint Eastwood Western. Real good movie, actually. It's Triple Play Thursday, everybody. Yeah, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. It's one artist, three songs. You request them, we play them. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We are here till 5 a.m., and coming up is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. So we've been talking about the popular dog names of 2018 and some of the other pop culture-inspired names for pets. And let's see, we've got a caller here on the line. Here's Jeffrey on WGN. Hi, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I named my dog after a movie I saw called Zoltan, the Hound of Hell.
Oh, yeah.
And it was Zoltan, it was Count Dracula's dog.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you ever saw that movie, but it's wonderful. It's a great. It's funny and everything else.
Yeah.
It's one of those hidden pleasures.
No, I've seen that one. I've seen it. I love that movie. Absolutely.
Right. Well, I just thought I'd let you know. But as far as I know, I'm the only one that ever named my dog that.
Yeah. Yeah. You might be. So, all right, Jeffrey. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah. Bye.
You know, that has an alternate title. Just simply, Dan, when it came out, it was just called Dracula's Dog. And I remember seeing it in the theater, and I enjoyed it. But the title is just Dracula's Dog. That was a 70s movie, I want to say. Like mid-70s, maybe, early 70s. And I'm trying to remember who played Dracula in it. But it was, I remember seeing, I know my dad took me to see it because it was a horror movie in the 70s and where Dracula was in the title. So, of course, you know, I would pitch a fit if I didn't see something called Dracula's Dog. But I can't remember who played. Dan, can you look up Dracula's Dog on the IMDb systems to see? Because I'm trying to remember, I want to say, it wasn't Barry Newton. No, it wasn't Barry Newman.
Michael Pataki.
Oh, Michael Pataki. Right. Michael Pataki. He's a guy that you'd recognize if you saw him. He was one of these guys. What year was that?
77.
Oh, was it really that late? Oh, geez. I thought it was much earlier than that. Yeah, Dracula's Dog. Yeah. You know the critics are going to love that movie. You release a movie called Dracula's Dog, you're going to get great reviews. Okay, here are the rest of the popular dog names from 2018. Charlie, Coco, Daisy, Bailey, Lola. Next on the list is Molly. And then next would be Sadie. And then Toby would be eighth. And the ninth spot would be Sophie. And the tenth spot would be Bear. You know, I was bitten by a dog. I've told this story on Thanksgiving, and my parents took me to go see the movie Heroes with Henry Winkler. to make me feel better. And the dog that bit me, his name was Duchess. And Duchess had a sibling, and that dog's name was Bear. So I knew that dog. That one didn't bite me. That one, Bear, never bit me. They were a pair of German Shepherds. But, yeah, so there it is. Bear, Sophie, Toby, Sadie, Molly, Lola, Bailey, Daisy, Coco, and Charlie. Those are your popular dog names. Let's see. 224 area code says, here's a good one. Every time someone would ask me what my dog's name was, I'd say Mike Hatt, M-I-K-E, and then the H-A-T. So it would be two words, Mike Hatt, which sounds like you're saying my cat. And they kept saying, no, what's his name? Finally, they got the joke. My cat. Say my cat. That's pretty clever. Kathy says, we have several dogs and cats over the years using relatives' nicknames, like Dutch, Sophie, Mamie, and others. There's Sophie. Let's see. 630 area code says, both of my neighbors have a dog named Rudy. What are the odds of that? But yeah, one house on one side, hey, we got a dog named Rudy. Other house on the other side, yeah, I got a dog named Rudy. So does that mean you're required, if you live in that neighborhood, you're required to name your dog Rudy? That's like, is that a neighborhood requirement, like a block requirement? In order to live on this block, you must own a dog named Rudy. Oh, man. All right. So those are some ideas for you if you have popular pet names. So, yeah. All right. We're going to take a break here on WGN, and when we come back, in keeping with the pet topic here, we have some of the richest animals in the world that have made their money either through inheritance or have made it through marketing or acting. And we're going to go through the richest animals in the history of the world. So that's coming up. If you want to jump in with any of this as a topic, we've got the phone lines and the text lines going. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. The news is up now. Triple Play Thursday. Triple Play Thursday continues. Yeah, Major Triple Play Thursday. And that's one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now at 312-981-7200. Our good friend Trucker Rich requesting some Big and Rich. That's 8th of November. It's a song about the Vietnam War in honor of Veterans Day, which is coming up this weekend. So, yeah. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We've got some Thanksgiving-related stories that we're going to get to, but we're talking about pets and things like that. We were just talking about dog names, and now we're going to talk about the richest pets in history. 312-981-7200 if you have any sort of pet comments or if you want to share your names of pets or anything along that line. 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter, at Nick D. Show. Facebook is the best way to stay connected, though, at facebook.com/Nick D. Show. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, and we're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive right here on WGN. We've got a few texts here before we jump into the category of richest pets in history. Let's listen to a few or read a few texts here. 630 area code says, I'm Greek and Italian. My dog's name is Demi, which means half in both Greek and Latin. Oh, okay. Demi. See, 219 area code says, my dog's name is Tennant. Self-explanatory. Guessing a Doctor Who fan? Would that be my, I would be correct on that, right?
Oh, I thought he was going with the dog lives in the house with him.
Oh.
But he did spell it the other way, so I think you're probably right.
Yeah, my first thought would be that he's a Doctor Who fan, or he's a fan of the HBO show Camping, of which there's only one fan, and that's me. No, I didn't bring that up with Dan when Dan was on earlier. I forgot to bring up Camping, which is just like filled with so many unlikable characters. The least of which is Jennifer Garner's lead character, but David Tennant's hilarious in it. 630 area code says, In France, dogs are named by a letter that corresponds with the date of the litter. My sister living there with her daughter, we're trying to name the daughter's new puppy. The letter that year was I. The pup responded to ice, so that's what they went with. Ice. Then they could play ding 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 ding. They can just play the vanilla ice, ice ice baby. 773 area code says my sister named our French poodle Paraphrase, and we called her Pear. Yeah, that's the other thing. You can shorten. You can always shorten the actual name to a nickname. Let's see. 608 area code says I have two dogs, one named Argus and one named Cygnus. Well, there you go.
All right.
All right. So, the richest pets in history. The first one here is Gunther the Fourth. Gunther the Fourth is a second-generation millionaire canine and currently the richest animal in the world. His father, Gunther the Third, inherited $80 million from German Countess Carlotta Liebenstein. Who would leave $80 million to a dog? Well, this person would. He, in turn, left that money to his son, whose caretakers have invested his fortune to the point where Gunther the Fourth is worth approximately $400 million. He owns mansions around the world, eats caviar daily, and he has his own personal maid. How does a dog own mansions around the world? How does that work? Somebody like a human buys it and then puts it in the dog's name? Is that how that works? Like an insane human?
Or leaves it to him in the will.
Yeah. Oh man, there's some weird people, man. Rich people are weird. Let's leave $80 million to a dog. What is this? He's got a personal mate, he eats caviar daily. There's no way he plays fetch or anything like that. He's not going to get up. You throw a stick, he's going to go, yeah, it's really nice. Now go get it. I own you. I'm Gunther the Fourth. Next here is Grumpy Cat. I love Grumpy Cat. Remember when Grumpy Cat was popular? I miss Grumpy Cat, like, not being everywhere.
Yeah, he hasn't produced a meme recently.
No, it's a she.
Well.
Grumpy Cat. Name is Tartar Sauce. It's arguably the most famous animal on the planet thanks to one of the most endearing internet memes ever created based purely on her permanently disgruntled look. Apart from her social media and merchandising empires, she also starred in her own movie, Grumpy Cat's Worst Christmas Ever, where she was voiced by Aubrey Plaza. Did you watch that one?
I did not.
Oh, really? Eileen wouldn't want to watch that one? I think it was on Lifetime.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I guess we were too busy watching a Christmas movie, so.
Yeah, well, that is a Christmas movie.
Well, I know, on the Hallmark channel.
Oh, on the Hallmark. Oh, yeah. Okay.
They're the competing channels.
Oh, I see. Okay. So now, do they compete? Has one of them started already?
Yes. Which? I forget which one. I think Hallmark.
Well, Hallmark has started their Christmas movies. They started them actually before this, right? Or much even, it was in October, right?
Right. I think the day after Halloween.
So, all right. But I actually watched it because I love Grumpy Cat so much, and it was terrible. But it was a really stupid movie. But you got to see Grumpy Cat. And I got to say, and maybe you agree, I think the voice casting of Aubrey Plaza was inspired.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I think it's perfect, right? She's so weird, Aubrey Plaza. I like Aubrey Plaza, but she's a weirdo. The relationship between her and Chris Pratt on Parks and Rec, that was one of my favorite things about that show, was the two of them. I don't know. And as I've said before, I prefer my Chris Pratt pudgy. I don't like muscular, thin, hot Chris Pratt. I like doughy, pudgy, goofy Chris Pratt. You know, I'm happy he's all hunky now and in good shape and all that stuff, but I don't know. I like doughy Chris Pratt. I like Andy. I like Chris Pratt Andy. That's what I like. Though her net worth is still cited at being about $100 million, her owner said that's not quite true. Still, it's definitely in the millions and a heck of a lot more than any typical American can ever hope to make. So, Grumpy Cat. Although, the popularity of Grumpy Cat has gone down a little bit. And you don't see a lot of it. Do you see the meme? No. Do you see that meme? It's not as much.
No, not as much.
Olivia Benson is next. Olivia Benson. She may be owned by Taylor Swift and share a name with a Law & Order SVU character, but Olivia Benson doesn't just sit back and let the money flow through her songstress's as her songstress's benefactor. She has a huge social media presence and has starred in ads for Coke, Keds shoes, and netting her personal worth at around $97 million. Now, what it doesn't say what kind of animal this is. Olivia Benson. So is it who?
It's a cat.
Oh, it's a cat. Oh,
it's a cat owned by Taylor Swift. Named after the SVU character.
And is that character Mariska Hargitay?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know her name. So Taylor Swift is such a fan of SVU that she named her cat Olivia Benson?
Yeah, she actually recruited Mariska Hargitay to appear in one of her videos.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know any of that. The cat's worth $97 million. I think that's more than Hargitay is worth.
Probably.
Seriously. All right, next here are Oprah Winfrey's dogs. Oh, there's a shocker. Oprah's dogs are rich. Luke, Layla, Sadie, Sonny, and Lauren have the distinction of being the dogs of Oprah Winfrey. That alone would make them rich in spirit, but has added the hook of an assured inheritance. Winfrey has already agreed to leave the five dogs $30 million upon her death. Man. Gigu? Is that how I'm G-I-G-O-O? Gigu? Gigu?
Sounds right.
Gigu, G-I-G-O-O. The chicken, formerly belonging to late British publisher Miles Blackwell, sits on a nest egg of $15 million. Blackwell sold his business and retired to the country just 3 weeks before he died. So here's a guy who leaves $15 million to a chicken. $15 million to a chicken. Oh, wow. All right. Tomasino is next. Maria Assunta was an extremely wealthy Italian businesswoman who, upon her death, left $13 million a fortune to her cat, Tomasino. The wealth wasn't just in cash, though. The cat also became the owner of several castles, villas, and estates throughout Italy. Wow. What if you moved into one of these places, like, and your landlord is a cat? What do you, instead of getting a rent check, what do? You just leave him a bowl of milk? It's like, here's my rent check. I have to write my rent check out this month to Tomasino, the cat. All right. These stories are crazy. Let's take a quick break here as we contemplate how nutty people, rich people are. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in on any of this here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. It's Big and Rich from Trucker Rich. Save a horse, ride a cowboy. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've been talking about some animals stuff here, pets and dog names. And now we're talking about the richest pets in the world, where a lot of rich, eccentric people are leaving millions and millions of dollars to their pets and also, like, real estate to their pets as well. And millions of dollars to a chicken. That's the one that really got me. And we were talking about naming your pets a little bit earlier. And 905 area code says, we had two cats, Mozart and Jazz. They love to sleep in our boys' guitar cases. Well, that makes sense. They're musically named. Why not sleep in a guitar case? 585 area code says, my cousin named her horse Ask Him. It was funny when people would ask her what the horse's name was. Ask Him. They always have weird names for, I mean, for horses have weird names. I mean, horses that like race horses. You know, they have the some very strange names.
Yeah, one of my favorites, and I'm trying to pull it up, but it's something having to do with, you know, happily married versus I'm getting a divorce, I believe were the two horses' names. One was named Happily Married, the other one, and of course they were neck and neck at the end.
Oh, of course. You don't remember, Dan, does the name Phil Georgeff mean anything to you?
It does not.
Phil Georgeff was the for people out there who are of a certain age, you know who Phil Georgeff is. If you played the ponies, if you watched horse racing, Phil Georgeff was probably the most famous horse racing announcer, and I believe he coined the phrase "Here they come spinning out of the turn." That's Phil Georgeff, one of the most recognizable voices, and he was like the horse racing caller. I mean, and you know, he had the most distinctive voice, and he had a really great style. And yeah, I used to go to the track at a very young age. My dad used to love to play the. My dad and my dad's brother used to love to play the ponies. I was at the track many times when I was a kid, many times, and I learned about playing the ponies when I was young. I haven't been out to Arlington in a long time. When was the last time you were at Arlington?
It's been a while.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
It's been too long. I mean, it's, you know, I when I go there, I do play the ponies, but you don't have to because it's a really beautiful place.
Right. Like, right. It's a nice place to just a way to spend an afternoon with the family.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what my brother does. Okay. I found that call. I had the names wrong, but you kind of get the drift here.
Okay.
My wife knows everything in front. To the outside, the wife doesn't know. My wife knows everything. The wife doesn't know. My wife knows everything. More than the wife doesn't know.
That's pretty great. Where was that? Does it say?
No, it doesn't say.
That's pretty funny. That is pretty funny. Yeah, you know, I bet, Dan, that they have like a ton of Phil Georgeff. You know, like calls on the internet, I would imagine, because I mean, seriously, legendary. Here they come spinning out of the turn. I believe he invented that. So
out of the turn, sixth of period now by five lengths. Miguel in second, Iron Maid a third. They're coming to the eighth hole. Sixth of period by five lengths. They pass the eighth hole of the mile, 1:35. Sixth of Kellyett all by himself. America's super horse, Ron Turcotte up, 50 yards to come. Sixth of Kellyett by seven. Sixth of Kellyett eight lengths. And Nigel and our native is third.
Did he say Secretariat America's super horse?
Yep.
That's fantastic. That's the guy, man. That was the guy. The voice of horse racing right there, Phil Georgeff. And he had that's a unique name, too. It's one of those names that you don't forget. Because I remember as a little kid, you know, and you don't forget like a name like that.
Sure.
815 area code says, the girl that lived next door to me marched to a different drummer. She had twin lap dogs named Sasa Fufu and Nini No No. All right. And 630 area code says, our dog's name was Chance because when my daughter was little, she kept asking for a dog, and we kept telling her no chance. So when we got her, she decided to name it Chance. That's good. That's a good story. All right. All right, I got a few more of these rich pets that we're going to talk about, but we have to take a break here for the news and more. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. If you want to join us, that's cool. And we're going to do a little Thanksgiving-related stories as we lead into that holiday. But more rich pets coming up in your talk and your texts at 312-981-7200. The news coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you'd like to join us. It's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. And it's one artist, three songs. Trucker Rich with his triple play of Big and Rich, and That's Why I Pray. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. And we are going to be talking about some Thanksgiving-related topics as we approach that holiday. But we've been talking about dog names and pets and the richest pets ever. And the biggest one, of course, is Gunther the Fourth, who is worth approximately $400 million. He eats caviar every day. He owns mansions around the world, and he has a personal maid. It's a dog I was speaking of. yes. As we continue, next here is Blackie. Blackie was once at the top of the list, as he used to be the world's wealthiest cat. His $12.5 million fortune came purely from inheritance. He is the last surviving pet of Ben Rhea, a multimillionaire who was estranged enough from his own family to bequeath his riches to a feline. I bet the family felt great about that. I bet they were just thrilled. I bet the family was like, "Yeah, that's great. Just give the $12 million to a cat. That's fantastic." All right, next here is Conchita. Conchita. When you can afford to buy your dog Tiffany's necklaces and cashmere sweaters, it might be the universe's way of telling you you have too much money. Regardless, deceased heiress and socialite Gail Posner left her Chihuahua Conchita a sizable fortune of $8.4 million, including a posh waterfront pad in Miami, for seemingly no other reason than she could. And there's Conchita the Chihuahua, worth $8.4 million. Then there's Boo. That's the name of one of my parents' cats. Boo. My parents have two black cats. Boo and Max. Maxwell. Boo, a famously adorable Pomeranian owned by Irene Ahn, has built a merchandising brand around himself based purely on his unfiltered cuteness. Life-size stuffed versions of him are available for purchase. He has his own book. He has accrued several million social media followers, and his net worth sits at around $8 million. I don't know who Boo the Pomeranian. Have you seen Boo?
I have not.
Apparently, he's got several million social media followers, and you can buy a life-size stuffed version of Boo. Does he pop up if you Google, yes, Boo the Pomeranian?
Yes, or you can go to his website, boothedog.net.
Does he maintain his own website, I would imagine?
Yes. He is quite adorable.
Is he?
Looking at that.
Okay.
He's got like an Art Garfunkel afro, mm-hmm, going for him.
Okay. That's Boo. I've never heard of him until this moment. Wonder what the life-size stuffed versions go for. What are they, like 40, 50 bucks maybe for a life-size?
No, thankfully, a little more affordable. Looks like the most expensive is 25, with most of them selling between $8 and $12.
Oh, that's not bad. That's not bad. I thought they'd try to really wring the money out of people. Yeah, that'd be $55 for a stuffed Boo. And then finally, Bart the Bear 2. Bart the Bear 2 is one of the few animals on this list to actually have earned his wealth. Basically, oh yeah, I know about this one. Basically, if you've seen a bear in a movie in the last 20 years, there's a solid chance it was Bart, who was named after Bart the Bear, the Alaskan Kodiak bear who starred in dozens of projects between the late 70s and the late 90s. Bart passed away in 2000, but Bart the Bear 2, who has no biological relation to the original Bart, but both were trained by Doug Seuss. If Bart 2 looks familiar, you may have seen him in an episode of Game of Thrones where he squared off with Brienne of Tarth and Jaime Lannister. The net worth is around $6 million. I remember Bart. I remember Bart the Bear. They made Bart the Bear, they made a big deal out of that back in the 70s and 80s. And he used to make appearances. Bart the Bear used to make appearances on like talk shows and stuff. I think he was on, I think he was on Johnny Carson's show a couple of times. Well, the, you know, I mean, obviously with the trainer. It's not like the bear just came out and sat down on the couch and went, rawr! Like Johnny would ask him a question, he would go, rawr! Now, here's my, now the first question that I have about that is Bart the bear, is that the bear that a shirtless Leslie Nielsen wrestles in Day of the Animals? That's the first thing that popped into my head. But yeah, Bart the Bear was like everywhere. He was on, you know, they used him in a ton of stuff. I didn't realize that there was a Bart the Bear too, but there you go. But yeah, that's the first question I had was, what did it, was it Bart the Bear who wrestled shirtless Leslie Nielsen? Oh, man. Day of the Animals. So, but Grumpy Cat still worth over $100 million, which is interesting. Yeah.
All right. So I've got Bart the Bear's IMDb profile.
Okay.
Debuted in 1980's Windwalker.
Oh, okay. Then he wasn't the bear that wrestled Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah. But has a special tie to this show because his second appearance, uncredited, but indeed confirmed, Kenny Rogers is the gambler. The adventure continues.
It all comes back to that, doesn't it?
Never fails.
It all comes back to Kenny Rogers, man, and the gambler movies. What else was he in?
Let's see here. The Great Outdoors.
Oh, okay. So there's a bear in The Great Outdoors that stomps the... knocks the that knocks the door off the cabin, and John Candy is underneath the door, and Bart the Bear is the bear on top of the door crushing John Candy.
Right.
Okay.
White Fang.
Okay.
The Giant of Thunder Mountain. On Deadly Ground.
Oh, wait a minute. On Deadly Ground? So he fought Steven Seagal. Wow. Bart the Bear in a Seagal movie.
Yeah. Legends of the Fall.
Oh, sure, Brad Pitt. I got to hang out with Brad Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't they? I think there's a... I've only seen Legends of the Fall once. But doesn't, like, Anthony Hopkins get mauled?
I believe you're right.
But so Bart the Bear mauled Anthony Hopkins.
Yes.
That was a terrible movie, by the way. He had some... I'll tell you what, though. Brad Pitt has fabulous hair in that movie. And yeah.
He and Brad have a good working relationship because he went on to appear in 12 Monkeys.
Oh, yeah, he's the because all the animals are running around in the streets. Because have you seen 12 Monkeys?
I have, a long time ago, though.
Yeah, but you remember like that sort of that plague that wipes everybody out, and the animals are running around in cityscapes and stuff? Mm. I remember Bart the Bear in that one, yeah.
I was in Homer Bound 2, Lost in San Francisco.
Sure, of course, yeah.
He was the titular character in Walking Thunder.
I've never heard of Walking Thunder, but that's the bear. It's the bear is Walking Thunder.
Correct. And he was also the bear in The Edge.
Ooh! Now, see, now that's a tour de force. That is a tour de force right there. Yeah.
His final on-screen credit was Meet the Deedles.
Wow. But wow, you know what, man? The Edge, that's a good movie. That's a really good... Anthony Hopkins. Anthony Hopkins again. What the hell?
I'm just imagining a poker game now between Anthony Hopkins, Kenny Rogers, Brad Pitt, and Bart the Bear.
Well, Kenny Rogers is going to know when to fold him.
Yeah,
when
absolutely
to hold him.
Would.
Well, it's Alec Baldwin, because I was trying to think of who the other person was in that. That movie's good, man. Have you seen The Edge?
Just bits and pieces.
Oh, it's good. Mamet wrote that thing. And it's full of Mammonisms. It's like Mammoth just like, I'm going to write a bear movie. I'm going to have two guys out in the wilderness fighting the wilderness and a bear. That movie rules. Bart the Bear's good in that movie. That's a good performance. And he maybe Anthony Hopkins left him something in his will since they worked so well together. Bart the Bear. All right. So those are the richest pets in the world, and then so we've got Bart the Bear too. Okay. All right. Well, those are it. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us for talk or text. We're going to talk about some Thanksgiving stories as we lead up into that holiday and much more here on 720 WGN. We're going to break here. We've got the weather here. And after the weather, we will take another break, and we'll come back, and we'll jump into some Thanksgiving topics. And if you want to text or talk, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Now, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. And that is Mr. Rogers from the 224 area code requesting, "It's Such a Good Feeling," Mr. Rogers. One of my favorite things, by the way, we're back. It's Nick DiGilio here. One of my favorite things about Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood is that George Romero worked on it. That's I just think that is just such a great detail. As if George Romero, you know, was a worked. He ran the cameras. He did editing on it. When he made Night of the Living Dead, he would shoot Night of the Living Dead. Normally at night or on the weekends, and then he would drive back and work on and he would use equipment from Mr. Rogers from the studio. They allowed him to take some equipment, you know, cameras and stuff. So there's forever a connection between Night of the Living Dead and Mr. Rogers. I just think that's fantastic. It's one of my favorite things of all time. And I've interviewed George Romero many times, you know, and actually got to know George over the years, and he told great stories about working for Fred Rogers. Just, you know, like, couldn't have been nicer. He was awesome and encouraged, you know, creativity. He saw Night of the Living Dead and liked it. Mr. Rogers liked Night of the Living Dead. How is that not the most mind-blowing thing ever? So George Romero worked on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Mr. Rogers saw Night of the Living Dead and liked it. And some of the equipment that was used in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was used in the making of Night of the Living Dead. See, that's just, there's just something really, somehow, I don't know why, but somehow that feels right to me. I don't know. I'm not really sure. It sounds like it shouldn't, but it feels right. I mean, it also feels right, you know, having gotten to know George Romero over the years and what an incredible guy he was and what a really nice guy he was, and really open and awesome. That it's great. I just love it. It's one of my favorite details ever. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 o'clock. Coming up, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell, and coming up is Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. Thanksgiving is coming up. Dan, are you hosting anything, or are you going to different houses? What are you doing?
We are not hosting this year. My wife's side, actually, we've actually started a tradition of doing it the Sunday before Thanksgiving.
Ah.
So that allows everybody to actually have a good time and not keep an eye on the clock. Right. So we'll be doing it the Sunday before, and then on the actual day, my Uncle Mike and Aunt Susan are hosting.
Okay.
So,
and your birthday is the day before.
It is.
What are you going to do? You guys got plans for your birthday?
We are going to relax is what I asked for, and I'm receiving.
And we're off that whole week.
Yep.
So do we know who's going to be filling in for us?
Brian Noonan.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay. And who's producing for him?
I know Dan Long is definitely in Wednesday night to Thursday. Okay. I'm not sure about the rest of the week.
Okay, cool. So there you go. The show's in good hands.
Yes.
Dan Long, Brian Noonan. I couldn't think of two better people to leave the show off with while we're gone for the holiday weekend. It's a birthday and a holiday weekend for you. It's going to be busy, man. You're starting on Sunday.
Right.
You were going to relax on your birthday on Wednesday, and then you get right back to it on Thanksgiving.
Yep.
All right. Very, very cool. All right. Well, Thanksgiving is it's my favorite if technically Halloween's not really a real holiday, you know. I mean, we call it a holiday, but you got to work on Halloween. But Thanksgiving is my favorite. And I don't, you know, it used to be sort of a bigger deal when our families would get together because it's just me and my parents, you know, mostly. But I love it, you know. I don't know what my mom's making this year. Last year she did lasagna. She went Italian on it, and we didn't do the traditional. And I'm like, my mom doesn't need to be making 15,000 things and, you know, worrying about, you know, a turkey in the oven for 9 hours. You know, just she can make something basic and it's fine. It's just we're going to share the meal together and hang out. But it's my favorite. I like Thanksgiving a lot. I always have ever since I was a kid. It's always been my favorite. So I look forward to it. And, you know, So just hang out with the folks. We're going to watch a little football. Bears are playing. So that should be fun. So, but Thanksgiving is cool. But now here's the deal. To make things a little bit easier, we have a little story here. There's a chain that's selling a Thanksgiving meal kit that's practically effortless. Now, see, this sounds good to me because, you know, there's so many components to the classic Thanksgiving dinner. So much stuff is going on. You know, every burner is taken. The oven's on. There's 9 things in there. You got to worry about the turkey and do the basting and do it all that. Here's what they say, though. What's better than eating all day on Thanksgiving? Not having to wake up at the crack of dawn to get everything ready. This season, Cracker Barrel. Oh, good old Cracker Barrel. Cracker Barrel wants you to spend more time with the family and less time in the kitchen, so the brand is offering a hassle-free heat-and-serve meal that takes 2 hours or less to prepare and feeds up to 10 hungry bellies. That sounds like a good deal. Hey, is Popeye Doyle's, Popeye's, are they doing the Cajun turkey again? Because they have this, we did that 1 year. We got the Cajun turkey from Popeye's 1 year. It was really good. You get it, and then you just throw it in the oven for a while.
It looks like they are.
Oh, it's good. If you want, you know, less hassle, get that turkey. You only have to put it in the oven, and you don't have to really, you know, worry about anything else. I can't remember how long you have to cook. I think it's hour and a half or something like that. But it's really good. And if they're offering that, maybe that's the route we can go this year with my folks. And then my mom doesn't have to do anything. She'll do a couple of sides. I think you can get sides though with the Cajun turkey from Popeye Doyle's. And by the way, I'm forever going to refer to it as Popeye Doyle's from now on.
As you should.
Because for those of you who didn't listen the morning that my mind was completely blown, Popeye's chicken is not based on Popeye the Sailor. So for all of these years, for these many, many, many years, I've always thought that Popeye's chicken was inspired by Popeye the Sailor. But in fact, it wasn't. The original owner was a massive fan of the French Connection. This is a true story. Was a massive fan of the French Connection and named Popeye's after Popeye Doyle, who is Gene Hackman's character in the French Connection. And I think that's the coolest thing of all time. So Popeye Doyle's, that's what it should be called. So Cracker Barrel's the turkey day kit, it costs $109, which is approximately $10.90 per person, and it includes all the essentials: 2 oven roasted turkey breasts, cornbread dressing, turkey gravy, cranberry relish, sweet yeast rolls, and a choice of 3 sides, including carrots, corn, fried apples, green beans, green bean casserole. That's an additional $2.49 because you got to charge more for the green bean casserole. A hash brown casserole, macaroni and cheese, mashed potatoes with turkey gravy, and sweet potato casserole. All of that stuff you can choose from that. A pumpkin pie and a pecan pie are also included for dessert. Customers can reserve their heat and serve meal kits now, to be picked up between November 17th and November 25th. So if you're thinking about doing this, there you go. So if you have absolutely no intentions of lifting a finger on Thanksgiving, Cracker Barrel also offers home-style turkey and dressing family meal to go. The option costs $67.99. It feeds up to 6 people and comes hot, packed, and ready to serve upon pickup. It includes turkey, ham, turkey gravy, a choice of 3 quart-sized sides, cranberry relish, a choice of biscuits, corn muffins, or a loaf of sourdough bread. If none of this phases you and you just want to get out of the house, or perhaps you're spending the holiday alone and you can't quite eat for 6, Cracker Barrel will be open on Thanksgiving, which reportedly is the chain's busiest day of the year. Not surprised by that. I'm not surprised at all. Guests can mosey on in from 11 a.m. to close for a home-style turkey and dressing meal, which comes with turkey, gravy, ham, sweet potato casserole, cranberry relish. I'm starting to get hungry now. A choice of 1 side, buttermilk biscuits or corn muffins, a slice of pumpkin pie, and a refillable beverage. All for just $12.99 per adult and $7.99 per child. That's great. That's really cool. Cracker Barrel. So there you go. Get your turkey day kit. And if you don't even want to cook, you can get your home-style turkey and dressing family meal to go. And you can order the Turkey Day kit now, and you can pick it up between November 17th, November 25th, and it cuts down a lot of hassle in the kitchen. And it's coming from Cracker Barrel, which is a great chain. So the Thanksgiving meal kit, it's an option right there. All right. We're going to talk more, and we have turkey myths that could ruin your Thanksgiving. That's coming up. And if you want to jump in with any Thanksgiving stories or memories, 312-981-7200. And we'll be back for the news after this. A Triple Play Thursday continues. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. And that's a 224 area code with Mr. Rogers and Won't You Be My Neighbor, which, by the way, is the name of a documentary, which is now streaming, and you can get it now. It's a documentary about Fred Rogers, and it's really terrific. It's a wonderful, wonderful movie. If you're a fan of Mr. Rogers or Fred Rogers, or you just want to watch a movie that'll make you feel good, I highly recommend it. It's called Won't You Be My Neighbor, and it's streaming now. You can check it out. How's it going? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And we're talking some Thanksgiving stuff, and we're also going to talk about some turkey myths that could ruin your Thanksgiving. Yeah, and by the way, just wanted to let people know that, you know, the breaking story right now is out of California where there was an active shooter situation, and you know, the details are slowly coming in, and as more, you know, the picture gets clearer, we'll report more on it. Vic is in the newsroom and keeping an eye on the situation, so if there are any further developments, we'll jump in and give you all the latest on what's happening. But right now, you know, everybody's just keeping an eye on the situation, and slowly, as you know, more details are coming in. So we're keeping an eye on that situation. Just wanted to let you know. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. If you would like to follow us on Twitter, you can, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. There you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So we're talking a little Thanksgiving as we get closer and closer to that holiday, which is a fun holiday. We just told you about how Cracker Barrel is offering, an easy Thanksgiving meal kit that you can order and pick up. And also we were talking about how Popeyes is again offering the Cajun turkey in case you want to go that route. And we've done that in the past. My folks and I did do the Popeyes Cajun turkey thing. It was a few years ago, and it was very, very tasty, and not nearly as stressful and time consuming as you know, starting a turkey from scratch, you know, and making it in your house. So that's an option as well. But so let's say you're getting ready to do the whole Thanksgiving Day thing. You're obviously going to need to go to the grocery store in order to do that. Here is the absolute worst day to shop for your Thanksgiving groceries. Now, how about you guys out there? When do you guys plan on getting your Thanksgiving day stuff for the dinner? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So you know what a madhouse the grocery store can be, especially if you pop in right before an upcoming storm or a big football game, or too close to a holiday. Now, as someone who worked at the Jewels for many years. You know, Dan, I can't tell you the number of night before Thanksgivings that I've worked at the Jewel, or the day or the night before Thanksgiving. Insane. Absolutely insane. I've worked on Thanksgiving as well, and that too is a very busy day. You know, people run out of stuff, and so Thanksgiving we would be open. I can't remember how late they were open on Thanksgiving. I think I would work till... You know, maybe till, I think they were open till maybe 6 in the evening. Now you can go 24 hours. I mean, I know a lot of stores that are open, you know, like a 24 hours, or they're opening regular hours on Thanksgiving. But yeah, the day before Thanksgiving was typically one of the craziest days to work at the Jewels. And I know that that's still the case.
By the way, Canadian Bill texted and said the Jewels offers a signature turkey dinner that feeds 6 to 8 at the deli. You can see the offer on Twitter.
Yeah, I think that a lot of places do that. I know the Jewels does that. So you can check that out if you want to go to your, just, you know, head out to your local Jewel And you can get that. They don't have Jewel in Canada? Is he from Chicago, but he's Canadian? Is that the deal?
Yeah, that's a good question, Canadian Bill. We've never asked you. Maybe he's just a fan of Jewel Oscar. Maybe he's a fan of JoJo, and that's how he got started.
Well, who isn't a fan of JoJo? Come on now. I wonder what JoJo's doing for Thanksgiving. We should invite
JoJo. I think JoJo's serving up the... I want JoJo. If I'm going to be there on Thanksgiving picking up that meal, I want JoJo handing it to
JoJo
me at the deli counter.
Handing out the meals for the... So that's a good route to take, too. I think a lot of places are probably offering that, you know. Maybe we can find a list of them, Dan, at some point. Not tonight, but at some point before the end of next week. Maybe that's a... You know, they have someplace local... You know, localized where you can get your sort of pre-made turkey or your easy to make Thanksgiving dinners or whatever they're offering, you know. Since there is no bigger eating holiday than Thanksgiving, you'll want to be smart about when you shop for your turkey and trimmings. Let's start with when not to shop. You might imagine that the worst day to hit the supermarket is the day before Thanksgiving, and you're not entirely wrong. Stores will be busy with hordes of people who forgot that their favorite stuffing recipe calls for chicken broth or foolishly thought that one pack of butter would be enough. No, not for Thanksgiving. No way. 7-8 pounds of butter. That's what you need. At least 7-8 pounds of butter for a decent Thanksgiving. But the busiest turkey day shopping day of them all is not the day before Thanksgiving, but the day before that, the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. Yeah. No, actually, you know that I got to say this. You know, having worked at the Jewels for all the years that I did, the whole week leading up to Thanksgiving is pretty crazy. You know, it really is. I mean, it was leading up to that Thursday. It was pretty much a madhouse like every day and evening. But that whole week. But Tuesday is the worst, they say. Everyone thinks that Wednesday they will contend with nightmare crowds, so they try to beat the rush by shopping on Tuesday, says Michael Rollman. In his book, Grocery, The Buying and Selling of Food in America. Hey, can we get that book?
Sure.
Grocery, The Buying and Selling of Food in America, and the author's name is Michael Rollman, which is R-U-H-L-M-A-N. That sounds fantastic. I would love to read that book. Maybe we can get him on. To minimize hassles and make sure that you can find everything you need before shelves are picked bare, your best game plan is to stay out of the store that week if you possibly can, or finish up by Monday latest. That's good advice. A fresh turkey will stay good in the refrigerator for about 4 days before you cook it, as will any fresh veggies. A frozen turkey needs a few days to thaw safely in the refrigerator. Plan on 1 day for every 4 pounds, according to Butterball. And lots of Thanksgiving staples will be on sale in the weeks leading up to the holiday, so watch your circulars. So that's the advice right there. Don't go on Tuesday. Try to avoid the whole thing. Try to have all your shopping done on the Monday before Thanksgiving. And that'll be the easiest thing to do. And that's from the author of Grocery, The Buying and Selling of Food in America. Sounds like sound advice to me. Yeah. Because, yeah, I mean, they're really, I remember just people just, you know, taking stuff from the shelves and canned pumpkin being, you know, like thrown around and people slipping on stuff and running around. So, and I remember, you know, in the meat department, there was the butcher department was right, against the wall on the other side of the other, I was in the dairy and the frozen for most of that time. And on the other side, directly on the other side of the store that I used to work at Addison and Southport, which has now been remodeled years ago, but it's like real fancy schmancy. We were the smallest Jewel in the city when I worked there. We only had 12 aisles, and it was a very small store. But now it's, you know, it's two floors. You know, the whole second floor is like a liquor store. I mean, it's a fancy schmancy. It's got indoor parking now. But when we worked there, you know, when we were there, it was a very small store. But I remember the amount of turkeys that would come in, and it was stunning, the amount of, and they would all sell, the amount of frozen turkeys that would come in. And normally, you know, like the bottom shelf bin would be, you know, would be there to hold and to cool all kinds of different meats. But right around, you know, the Thanksgiving time, like right around now, or like maybe three, four days after today, that's all turkeys. Like it's all just, and people just come in, boom, 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 and grab them. So yeah, do not go the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. Get all your shopping done, hopefully by the Monday before Thanksgiving, and it shouldn't be that big of a hassle for you. Okay, we're going to talk turkey. Turkey myths that could ruin your Thanksgiving. I don't want to ruin your Thanksgiving. Nobody wants to ruin your Thanksgiving, but we got some turkey myths that we're going to get to. If you want to jump in with any of the Thanksgiving thoughts or advice, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We'll break in here for the weather. It's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, me, Triple Play Thursday! 312-981-7200. That's the phone number, the 224 area code requesting Mr. Rogers, and that's You Are Special. So Dan, the gathering that you and your family are going to have on that Sunday, is it going to be the basic Thanksgiving meal?
I believe it will be, yes.
Yeah. So all the regular...
fix-ins, all the usual stuff.
Yeah. Now, are you a fan of the basic Thanksgiving meal?
Yes, that is the best meal of the year, followed second best meal is the sandwiches you make using the leftover turkeys day after.
That's right. Yeah, the turkey, the leftover turkey, and there's always leftover turkey. Always. Unless you live next door to the Bumpuses, then you're screwed, basically. What was that, the scene where like he keeps trying to sneak a piece of turkey, and Melinda Dillon is don't do that, you'll get worms. Yeah, you know, people were talking about I was talking to someone and they were saying that there aren't that many Thanksgiving movies, and there really aren't. I mean, obviously, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is the first one that people think of. I showed that last year at this time for my film club last year, and we had a really big crowd, and people love that movie. But as I've mentioned before, for me, it's Home for the Holidays. Home for the Holidays with Holly Hunter and Robert Downey Jr. and Bancroft, Charles Durning. Here's how good that movie is. Here's how good it is. Steve Guttenberg is good in it. That's how good Home for the Holidays is. It's a really great film. A really, really great film. So I recommend that if you're going to do some Thanksgiving viewing. But here are some turkey myths. Your myth number one, always wash the turkey thoroughly. Experts say scrubbing down your bird is not only unnecessary, it could actually be harmful. You could splash disease-causing germs around your sink, countertop, utensils, and other food that you may be preparing. The USDA says it's virtually impossible to wash bacteria off a raw turkey. Instead, the group advises cooks to wash their hands for 20 seconds after handling it. So there you go. How about this next myth? You don't have to thaw a turkey completely. Actually, a properly thawed turkey is key to making the bird is fully cooked, to make sure that the bird is fully cooked. One that's partially frozen when it goes into the oven means that the outside will cook, but the inside will remain raw. Butterball advises that you place the unopened turkey breast side up on a tray in the fridge, allow 24 hours of thawing for every 4 pounds of turkey. Never try to cook a frozen turkey overnight at a low temperature in hopes that it would be tender and moist. Low and long is exactly what harmful bacteria needs to thrive. We call the temperature between 41 and 135 degrees the danger zone. That's the temperature pathogens can grow at, Ben Chapman, food safety specialist, told LiveScience.com. The USDA recommends setting your oven no lower than 325 degrees to decrease the risk of bacteria growth. Texts here. 630 area code. I got my turkey from Walmart. It costs 78 cents a pound. You can get everything at Walmart. Mark says Canadian Thanksgiving was back in October. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Canadian Bill says we have Safeway. So I guess Canadian Bill is in Canada. Matt from Marengo says, I also worked at Jewel in St. Charles. I remember we closed Thanksgiving Day at 11 a.m. After locking the doors, patron continued to bang on the glass to let them in. Oh, man. Hey, sorry, we're closed. No. I need cranberry sauce right now. Now, Dan, do you like the... like the sort of the fresh cranberry sauce with the cranberries in it, or I have a soft spot in my heart for the canned cranberry sauce that's shaped like a can.
Yes, we usually serve the can, and it is actually usually the one thing I avoid on the table. It's not my bag. If I have it, I have just a little bit.
Do you have both types?
No,
or just the can?
Just the can.
Just the can.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I grew up on that one. You know,
oh, sure.
That's the one that we had all the time. And, you know, the actual sort of cranberry sauce that people make with the cranberries and all that stuff, and you spoon it up. Bless you.
Thank you.
I don't like that as much. And I know it's better and it's fresher, and but there's just something about the can markings, you know, when you slurp it out
sure.
on the plate. And it's right there. And and I remember when sometimes I would help my mom out, and one of the chores that my mom would give me, because I couldn't really ruin it, you know, was to open up to slurp out the cranberry sauce onto the plate. And then you know what I would do? I would cut it with the lid that we would just cut that I just cut, you know, the lid. I would cut it with the edge of the lid that I had just cut off, which I'm sure was real sanitary, considering it came the can. You know, the outside of the can was, I'm sure, was real sanitary. But I used to do that. My mom discouraged that. Said, "Why don't you just use a knife, idiot?" But yeah, so I like the jellied cranberry in the can. I just find it really lovely that it's... I like the shape, that it's shaped like a can. It's got all the indentations. I love that stuff. All right, how about this? Never cook a frozen turkey is a myth. Never cook a frozen turkey. While you'd never want to start cooking a part-thawed turkey, a fully frozen one can go into the oven safely. The USDA recommends cooking a frozen bird for 50% longer than you would a thawed turkey of that size. And don't forget to remove... the giblets, when the turkey is cooked enough to reach them. That sounds like more of a hassle than you know what I mean? You got to cook it half longer than you would, and then you got to get in there and get the giblets out, or the giblets, however you want to say it. So, all right, we got more turkey myths that we're going to get to. If you want to jump in here, if you got any other Thanksgiving stories, or if you've got some advice, or what are you guys serving this year, if you want to jump in on that, we would love to hear from you. It's 312-981-7200. The news is coming up next here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. My main man, Steve Cochran, at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah! 312-981-7200, 773 area code, requesting Johnny Rivers with Memphis, Tennessee. So we're coming up on Thanksgiving. It's, what is it, 2 weeks from Thursday, right? 2 weeks from Thursday? Yeah. 2 weeks from Thursday. And we were giving you, I have some turkey myths that we are, that we're talking about. And so on and so forth. And we've been talking a little Thanksgiving stories here. Jay in Wisconsin says, I was working in Chicago 1 year on Thanksgiving. I was there and not home in Wisconsin, so I wasn't celebrating with anyone. I got out of work to discover the parade. I enjoyed that and then went to a wonderful Italian restaurant and I ate lasagna and it was great. Canadian Bill says, did you ever work overnight at the Jewels? Yes, I did for many years, Canadian Bill. At Safeways, we used to do turkey bowling. We'd set up some cans at the end of the aisle and knock them down with a frozen turkey. I don't remember ever doing that, but I will say that we did have hijinks. Let's just say that there were like Jeopardy. There was trivia hijinks because the store was closed. I know there's a lot of 24-hour stores out there. But we would close at, I think it would close at, we worked 11 to 7. and it would we would be closed, I think, at 11. I think at 11 o'clock they would close, or maybe 12, and then they would reopen at 6, I think. Or was it 6 or 7? I can't remember. But I know that that we were in there most of the bulk of the morning for the 8 hours that we were working. The place was closed, and there would be, you know, wackiness would ensue. Let's just say that. But I don't remember ever doing the frozen. I think I would remember doing the frozen turkey bowling. No, Canadian Bill, I don't think I ever did that. But I did do other crazy stuff. So 630 area code says, my wife and I compete each year for who cooks the best turkey. She normally roasts. I have fried the turkey as well as smoked them. This year, I'm smoking it with a Coca-Cola apple Cajun turkey. It normally wins. My neighbor tried it and went out and sought a smoker because it was so good. There you go. Be careful with the fryers, though. Dan, every year, how many stories do we hear about people burning down garages and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Just be really, really careful. And you know, there's a lot of footage out there of those things. You know? I mean, every single Thanksgiving, we always talk about like how there's some sort of disaster happen with a turkey fry when you're frying a turkey. So just be very, 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 very prepared. Be very, very safe and very careful. Dino says, I'm a Packer pecker, and I just delivered the New York Times on Broadway. All right.
I may have mistranscribed that. He delivered to the Jewel.
Oh, to the Jewel.
Yeah, on Broadway.
Oh, to the Jewel. Oh, Paper Packer, who just delivered the New York Times to the Jewel on Broadway. Which one? The Jewel, was it that, what would that be? Broadway and Wilson? Is that? Sheridan and Broadway, right? I think there's a Jewel at Sheridan and Broadway. We're Sheridan and Broadway cross. Maybe that's the one. Is there still one, Dan? Is the one on like Addison near Broadway, is that still a Jewel?
I will check.
Because we used to go to that one. Now the one that we went to for most of the time that we would go to the Jewels was at Addison and Western, right by Lane. That was the Jewels that we would go to all the time at Addison and Western. But sometimes we would go to the one on Broadway, right near Addison. On Broadway, right near Addison.
There is still
Is that Broadway. Still a Jewel?
Yep.
Wow, okay. Maybe it's that one that he's talking about. So
he sent a picture, and it does look like it.
That's the one from that's the one on Addison and Broadway. Yeah. I used to go there several times.
He confirmed Addison and Broadway.
Addison and Broadway. Do they still have the indoor parking where you go up the ramp and you would park indoors? They have to, right? I mean, it's still probably the same.
I would imagine in that neighborhood.
Yeah. It was. I just remember thinking that was cool. I used to like to drive in. We used to go up and then, like, you have to go downstairs to go to the grocery store, but you would park inside. And I always thought that was like, man, this is the coolest thing ever. So, right there on Broadway. All right. So we've been talking about turkey myths and some Thanksgiving stuff. And listen to this. We've got somebody who's listening in Sydney, Australia, and it's Tim. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Nick. How are you, mate?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Sensational. It's great to listen to your show tonight. Or, well, actually, tonight from our side and this morning for you guys.
Yeah, that's true. So you guys over there in Australia, you guys don't have a Thanksgiving.
Well, so we don't have Thanksgiving. It was once explained to me that the pilgrims never made it to Australia. So
yeah, that's true.
But that being said, you know, we celebrate our Christmas in, of course, the middle of summer.
Yeah.
And, you know, frequently in Sydney, it might be a 100-degree day, that is Fahrenheit. And we, for some strange, probably reasons that we've followed the British tradition, we'll have a turkey, we'll have a hot turkey, a hot ham, and so forth. But then we will also have the prawns, which you guys call the shrimps, and lobster and everything else along with it. But Americans are the best at making turkey. There's just no doubt about it. And it's probably because of Thanksgiving. So I've been enjoying these turkey tips tonight here. It's 9:40 p.m. Thursday night here in Sydney.
Yeah.
And it's just been actually quite enjoyable. I actually thought you could put a frozen turkey in the oven. But probably it's good to have heard your advice tonight.
Yeah, we've got a lot. We have a few more too of these turkey myths that you can so we can make your Christmas turkey maybe really delicious, Tim.
Look, Nick, I would imagine that in America, especially because of Thanksgiving, you probably get a fresh turkey that probably hasn't been put in the freezer for a couple of years. Whereas down here, we're maybe actually well and truly importing turkeys from the U.S.
Yeah.
And they may well have been frozen for a long time. So it's just really nice to listen to these things. We have these crazy turkey, duck, and chicken all in dish. And I don't know whether you've had that in the States.
It's called the turducken.
Turducken. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Turducken. Yeah, it's actually become very popular. I've never tried a turducken. But I like all three of the meats that are involved, and I'm sure I know a lot of people who have had it and said that they really enjoy it.
I hope I don't offend your audience, but who'd be a vegan?
Yeah. All right, Tim. Thanks for listening.
Nick, I've been listening to you for years, and I think you've been at WGN for a long time.
I have,
and I love the WGN website and watching you guys online. And you can probably wave to me right now, and I can say g'day back, although you can't see me.
All right, but, I'm waving.
Thanks to your producer. Thanks to your producer, and I'm a big fan of Chicago. I think it's one of the best cities in America, and I love WGN. It's a really terrific radio station.
I appreciate that, Tim. Thank you so much.
All the very best, mate.
Okay, take care. There you go. A little check-in from Sydney, Australia. How about that? I'm waving again in case he's watching on the stream there. Hi to Australia. All right. Let's see. Here's another Tim. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Nick, how's it going?
All right.
I want to switch with that guy. I have him come to Chicago for a little while, and I'll go to Sydney for a little while.
Yeah.
But there'd be no confusion on the name, at least.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So I got two quick stories for Thanksgiving. The first is it has to do with my sister's current husband. This is probably 15 years ago or so. You know, it's the first time that the boyfriend meets the parents, girlfriend meets the parents.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was first sort of holiday meal together. And my sister's husband, he's 100% Irish. His mom's, straight off the boat Irish. And his dad was, maybe first generation. So he's 100% through and through Irish.
Yeah.
So they have a little different traditions, apparently, for them on Thanksgiving. So he comes to my grandma's house on Thanksgiving, and my grandma always did the regular spread of the turkey and the potatoes and everything. And instead of the white potatoes, my grandma would make sweet potatoes, so they'd be like baked sweet potatoes.
Right.
Now, my sister's husband had never seen a sweet potato before.
Is that and right? So,
yeah, for someone. And so we're all sitting at the table, around, just sort of casually chit-chatting, all the food is out, and he cuts into the potato. He looks around. This is really interesting. Did you inject some sort of dye into the potato?
Oh, that's hilarious. That is hilarious. Wow.
He's like, what's a sweet potato? So anyway, that was the first one. It was really quite funny. I still give him a hard time to this day about that. And the other one, you're talking about the gelatinous mass of cranberry.
Yeah.
Out of the can.
Yeah.
Well, we do that as well. But this is actually talking about my girlfriend's sister's husband. And they get the canned kind, too, except in the kitchen, his mom would, cut it up and put it out, serve it nicely on a platter or whatever. Whereas at my girlfriend's parents' house, they would just, slurp it out of the can like you're talking about and put it on a plate and throw it on the table.
Right.
Which is my preferred method, too.
Right.
So he looked at it, what is this? He's like, oh, it's cranberry sauce. Like, oh, well, my mom gets the cut-up kind.
It was
the same thing.
My mom gets the pre-cut cranberry sauce.
Yes, the pre-cut cranberry sauce. When she cut it, she never paid attention.
That's hilarious.
So he still gets a hard time. We give him a hard time about those things.
That's funny. Funny. All right, Tim. Thanks, man. Yeah. Have a good one.
You too, man.
Okay, take care. That's funny. Well, my mom gets the pre-cut cranberry sauce. All right. Let's take a break here. We got some weather, and then we got more Thanksgiving-related texts and more turkey myth tips right here on 720 WGN. All right, man. Yeah, Triple Thursday wraps up here. 773 area code, Johnny Rivers, the seventh son. How is everybody doing? It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Coming up, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. All right, we're good. Doing some turkey tips. We got some Thanksgiving texts coming in. 773 area code says, Boston Market has a complete Thanksgiving dinner with whole turkeys and pies that can be delivered, and it's really tasty. 708 area code says, Nick, I always deep fry the turkey. After brining it, I separate the skin from the breast, put a layer of good bacon over the breast, and tie it with the skin loose with cooking twine. My niece is vegetarian except when I cook a turkey. Wait a minute. Wait. So she's... once a year she's not vegetarian, so
I know people who do that.
Is that right? 815 area code says there's one on Berwyn and Broadway as well. That's right. That's correct. Berwyn and Broadway. That's the Jewels, by the way. 773 area code says KitchenAid actually makes a countertop turkey fryer. I first saw Valerie Bertinelli use it on the Food Network, and I went out and bought one at Home Depot, and it works very nicely. Ooh. Okay. Let's see here. Is Dan on WGN. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Hey, I guess it's kind of something to look for, not so much a tip. But my mom, she makes the best turkey. I don't know what she does, but one thing she does is she puts turkey in one of those aluminum pans and then takes all the drippings and she makes gravy out of that. And one year she made a mistake, and instead of using flour, she used powdered sugar. Was not good gravy.
So
don't use powdered sugar instead of flour.
But, right, it's not going to work.
But the good thing is, we still had the meat, so we had pocket meat. You know,
that's right. Pocket meat lives on. Thank you, Dan.
And hey, one more thing,
yeah.
Nick. Hey, instead of Boston chicken. You should probably go to Lou's. They have the best pizza.
Okay. Lou's.
I've
heard of that. Okay, thanks, Dan. Take care, buddy.
Thanks.
All right, there you go. Lou Malnati's, by the way. All right, we got some more here. You got some myths here. Dan, you ready?
Ready.
Don't fall for this is a stuffed turkey won't cook all the way through. Don't fall for grandma's warning that roasting the stuffing in the bird will give the whole family food poisoning. Forbes.com says you can reduce the risk by heating the dressing up at least 130 degrees before placing it in the turkey. Also check the temperature of both the stuffing and the turkey meat before serving. Stuffing should be at least 165 degrees, whether it's cooked inside the bird or separately. How about this? Basting frequently keeps meat moist. Some chefs swear basting is flavor-enhancing. Others say it's a waste of time. For a less hectic cooking schedule, skip the basting. Contrary to popular belief, experts say basting doesn't actually flavor the meat as much as most of the liquid runs off the skin and back into the pan. The opening and shutting of the oven every 30 minutes can cool an oven quickly, adding to their overall roasting time. That's true. You want to keep that oven door closed. You keep opening it, and you're going to have to cook the turkey longer. Here's another myth. You can tell the bird is done by its thigh temperature. If the thigh temperature is 165 degrees and the juices run clear, the bird is finished roasting? Food experts at Gourmet Magazine recommend using the four-spot test to check for doneness. You prick both thighs, the thickest part of the breast on each side, and each wing. The bird isn't cooked enough until all pricks register 165 degrees, which is the USDA recommendation. Butterball advises waiting until the thighs reach 180 degrees and the breast is at 170. And then, of course, we have the famous pop-up thermometer. Now, those were always, we've had that a few times over the years, where you get the turkey that has the automatic thermometer already in it, and when it pops up, it's supposed to be done. I never trusted those things, and you know, we discovered a few times that we would use that, and then we would test the actual temperature, not just blindly trusting the thing, and sometimes it wouldn't be done. Thermometers that pop up when the turkey is cooked is an easy way for novice chefs to guarantee they aren't giving the whole family food poisoning, but most pros poo-poo the idea, the devices, because they're usually an indicator that the bird is overcooked. They're usually programmed to pop up at around 180, even though the USDA DA recommends cooking turkeys considerably lower at 165 minimum. But safety is the bigger issue. Consumer Reports tested pop-up monitors in 2014 and discovered that some pop up before the meat is fully cooked. Even if you do not want a pop-up thermometer guide, the USDA recommends double-checking the temperature at the innermost part of the thigh. And the myth is, don't eat the skin. Turkey skin is high in fat. The skin on a 3.5-ounce piece has about 4 grams of fat, between 30 and 40 calories, but it's a good kind of fat, they say. There is more non-saturated fat, non-unsaturated fat, than saturated fat in poultry skin, says someone from the Harvard School of Public Health. Mono-non-saturated fats help balance cholesterol levels, which could lower the risk of heart disease and may improve insulin and blood sugar levels. Don't make it your main meal, but feel free to have a portion and guilt-free, because it's not that it's not as bad as they say it is. Leftovers can sit out until the end of the meal. Harmful bacteria can grow quickly, especially if your dining room temperature is warm. Butterball suggests refrigerating leftovers within 2 hours of eating, and then either eat them or freeze them within 3 days. Get the turkey in the oven first thing in the morning is a myth. You don't want everyone's stomachs rumbling while they wait for the turkey, depending on what time you plan to gather around the table. You might need not need to start rushing the cooking. Depending on the size of the bird, it will need to cook for about 3 to 5 hours at 325. Plan your day accordingly. So, there you go. Some tips. Mark says, if you spatchcock a turkey, it cooks in almost half the time. A spatchcock is basically cutting it in half and laying it flat. Okay. 847 area code says that there's a jewel at Foster and Broadway as well. Oh yeah, that used to be a Dominick's, or am I nuts?
I want to say it was a Dominick's, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a Dominick's, because when I lived in that area, I think that was a Dominick's, because we had a Jewel at right by my where my apartment was. A block away, there was a Jewel. That's on Ashland/Clark, is where Clark and Ashland are running next to each other. I'm trying to remember the street, because I lived at Balmoral, and so it was one of those B streets, I believe, further north. It was about 3 blocks north of Balmoral, on Clark/Ashland, because it was on both of them. But Foster and Broadway, that used to be a Dominick's that I remember. That was back when I lived there. I haven't lived in Andersonville in a very long time. So, all righty then. So, some turkey tips for you, and we'll talk a little bit more about Thanksgiving as we get closer to the holiday. So, tomorrow we're going to have some live music in studio. Dan, what's the band that we're going to have in?
The Diving Bell.
The Diving Bell. They're going to be in here live. We'll hear some live music, and the wonderful Esmeralda Leon will be here. She's going to spend the show with us from 2 to 5, and we'll have all the regular Friday features, and Esmeralda Leon will be here. Skip Skipley will come by. We'll play a little For the Record and have a lot of fun with Esmeralda. So it's going to be a fun show tomorrow. Make sure you tune in. All right, the opening bell is up next after the news.